It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here. Serenity Caldwell, both from iMore. Of course, Andy Iannocco back from his visit to the Colbert Show. We are going to talk about, I'm sorry, all the announcements Apple made. It was a doozy of announcement last Wednesday. But we're going to get a little more granular, help you get ready for iOS 9 comes out tomorrow. WatchOS 2.0 comes out tomorrow. Help you decide which iPhone is the best, which deal is the best. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 472, recorded Tuesday, September 15th, 2015. The Megapixel Myth. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. If you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC, get a trademark, or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney if you need one. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, or creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/MacBreak. That's LYNDA.com/MacBreak. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/MacBreak to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. And I missed you guys. I'm so glad.
I miss you too, Leo.
So glad to be here. Actually, I've had more than enough of Renee Ritchie.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, it was
Sorry,
great.
Leo.
We did a 2.5-hour TWiT on Sunday with Renee and Ben Thompson of Stratechery and Ed Bott of ZDNet. And I thought that was a fabulous 2.5 hours. We basically recapped the Apple event. Analyzing it. It took about the same amount of time.
Real time.
Yeah. So if you're interested in kind of deep analysis of what, not so much like what the products are, not like, well, do you want this or not? That's, I think we'll do more of that today. But more strategically, because that's certainly Ben's forte, what it all means. And I just had a great time. So thank you. Also here's Serenity Caldwell from iMore.com. Hello, Serenity.
Hello. I'm happy to be back, finally. I feel like
missed
we keep
you.
On missing each other. Yeah, I know. It's been very
sad. Did you
sad,
go to the Apple event or did you stay in Boston?
I went Apple adjacent. So I got to watch the Apple event from the Square offices, and then I hung outside the Civic Center and actually did a podcast under the trees of the Civic Center with our dear friends from Clockwise. So,
oh, you know, it's funny because I watched the Apple event from the Square Space offices in New York.
Yeah.
So there's a certain irony to that.
There's a tie-in. Too bad no portals. No jumping between L.A. and New York from square to square space.
And welcome once again, Andy Iannocco. You were on the Apple keynote stream from outside the Stephen Colbert Show. You were going to episode 2 of the Colbert Show.
Yep, I did make that judgment call, and that's got to be the weirdest of if I need to actually make a proof to anybody that I take my job seriously, and I lost that credibility by saying no, I want to see the TV show instead of going to the Apple event. I said, well, I stood out there for literally 2 hours and 20 minutes like this, so that I can both watch the event streaming on this phone and also take part in the TWiT live coverage of that. So, oh boy. And it was 90 degrees outside and like 100.
There he is, folks, in the audience, looking like you're having a good time. That's a screen cap from the show itself.
Oh, God. It was such a great show. I've been to like a half dozen Letterman shows, and it's even better for the audience, the Colbert Show, than the Letterman Show.
Really? You loved it?
I was big grin on my face. It didn't go away. Applauding every chance I got. The great thing is Colbert, like, actually tries to, when they're not actually doing the show, like when they're setting things up, he goes to the edge of the stage and keeps entertaining the audience and the band, because sometimes it was only the second show. There were a couple of bits where like something went wrong, so they had to redo things. And instead of having the musical act like ready to go, they had to then stop for like 20 minutes while they set up the bandstand. So now the band is like walking through the audience, playing their instruments like a New Orleans jazz orchestra. And it's like you're out of there in like a little more than two hours instead of like in and out like you were with Letterman. But it's like, do we have to go? As a matter of fact, the show's over. The cameras are off. Colbert has said goodbyes. And now the band keeps playing. And now they start marching up the aisles to sort of like lead a parade of people out of the theater and into the lobby where the band is waiting to say hello to you. It's like, it's a good time. There were no free samples of Paul Molnov or anything like that during the old Ed Sullivan show, but it was pretty good.
Tim Cook's going to be on tonight, so this would be another night to go if you wanted to keep up on what's going on in Apple.
It's kind of a
mystery. We really don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he'll have something to plug.
He might. Do you think he'll have in hand some stuff? I bet he will.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No.
I think he has access.
This is the thing where, I'm sorry, we'll finish the introduction, but I just wanted to say it's like with other CEOs, this is the third tech CEO he has had as a guest on the show. That's amazing. But now Tim Cook has the absolute perfect way to dodge any questions about anything that he does not want to answer. He will just say, there's been a lot of complaints about so-and-so, and Tim will say, have you seen the new Apple Pencil? Oh, wait, it works with the new iPad Pro. Here, you can keep that one if you want. And that'll be the end of the question.
Can we see the picture again? Because Patrick Delahanty thinks he spotted David Letterman in the audience next to you. Is that Letterman two seats to your right, Andy?
We weren't introduced. However, he was during the half hour, 45 minutes we were waiting before like the warm up started. He was actively reading a newspaper.
Is it?
So I hope he puts that away during the show, because that's not a way to get the host excited about it.
It's not Letterman though, right?
It's absolutely not Letterman. If it were to Letterman now has a huge like Santa Claus beard.
So did Colbert for a while. Anyway, welcome to all of you. And there certainly is a lot to talk about. I'm sorry I missed the event last week. It's the first event I've missed since the iPod launch. But it's kind of it's kind of an interesting experience to see what's going on in the real world during an Apple event. Because here I am on the streets of New York City and nobody seems to really care. Nobody's, you know, they're not glued to the phone. They're not watching it on the screen. Even when we went to Squarespace, I had to kind of talk them into turning it on. Somebody said, oh, I think the Apple event's going on right now. In the real world, it doesn't have quite the attention that it does amongst.
That's true, but neither does a presidential address anymore, Leo.
That's true. You can walk down the streets during the State of the Union and see nothing either. Yeah, that's just New York. However, we are obsessively fascinated by each and every detail. I presume you're talked out about it because we did a Mac Break Weekly right afterwards, and I'm sure everybody had everything. Well, none of you were on it, so.
No.
Here's your chance, and nor was I. Here's your chance.
We can all talk.
So I guess I should first canvass you. What did you all order, Serenity?
I went 6+. This time, or 6S Plus this time, which was shocking even to me. But I wanted to try the big screen for a year. I went with the Space Gray 64 GB. Thought about the rose gold, which is really pink. But I don't really have anything that would match with... I'm more of a fall colors type girl.
Shoot, I was going to offer a trade.
It's not wedding season after all, yes.
I don't know why I was so...
Perfect match for a bridesmaid dress.
You look at the picture, it's pink, but I just believed Apple when they said, no, it's rose gold.
It's rose gold the way the gold iPhone is champagne. I mean, it's a marketing name.
Well, no, I mean, the gold iPhone does have a sort of light gold color to it. Rose gold is very much, I mean, especially because we've seen rose gold on the Apple Watch Edition, which truly looks like what I was... call rose gold.
Yeah, because it is rose gold. It's made of gold with copper in it. Well, that's called rose gold.
Exactly, with a nice reddish tint to it. Yeah. This is very much a pink iPhone, but we can't call it pink gold, so let's call it rose gold.
I'm so embarrassed. I bought it.
I bought it too, Leo.
It's nice looking. You know what? Actually, hilariously, after the event, two different men in my life texted me saying, I want this phone.
Really?
None of my female friends, but all of the dudes were like,
let's just say that
kink lovers.
A ton of male engineers are walking around Cupertino with this phone right now, Leo. I mean, this is the item that everyone wanted.
I guess. I can always put it in the case.
We're ahead of the fashion curve, man.
Right.
Pink for men is totally in.
Pink is cool.
It's a powder puff phone.
Okay, let's try to change the world. Somebody told me that pink used to be a masculine color in the early 19th century, or maybe even in the early 20th century. Pink was not for girls; it was for boys.
It's for anyone who likes light red, the same way they like light blue or light yellow.
This at least looks. It's not pink. It's not outrageously pink. Pink.
It's not hot pink.
It's only for people who like awesome. It reminds me of Easter, honestly. That's the color I associate with spring.
This is good.
It's a spring color. It's a spring color.
It's a spring color. So you got the big one. I did too. I thought the big one was too big last year. But I guess after talking with you, Renee, I decided to get a bigger screen because you say that more and more apps are using the extra pixels.
And the battery life and the controls are now easier with, I mean, there's just so many reasons.
And OIS, is OIS in the 6S as well?
No.
I am increasingly of the opinion that for low light photography, OIS does, in a phone, make a big difference.
And they have OIS for the video now too. And it looks like they showed some samples on the devices. Yeah. I don't think, they didn't show them, I was strange. They didn't really emphasize low light at the event, but they showed them and the deep trench isolation on at the demo area. And the low light shots were fantastic. But also those shots that had some light coming from the middle, like inside people's bedrooms or tents or campers. And it captured both really, really well.
What did you get, Renee? Fantastic.
I went 64 instead of 128 because I didn't go anywhere near 128 on my last phone, and I got the iPhone 6 Plus rose gold.
Okay,
unabashedly, Leo.
We're matchies, twinsies.
So
why don't you come over? We'll have a little, pajama party and a pillow fight.
Awesome.
We can do our nails. I'm sorry, that's rude.
Yeah, it's a little 1998.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed. I bought pink. That's what it is. Even my wife said, "You bought the pink?" She bought the pink.
It's
embrace
awesome.
It. There's, embrace it.
I'm going to embrace the pink. I got 128, partly because I want to just see how expensive these could be.
If you're going to go big.
After tax, more than $1,000. For a phone. The other reason I got it is I think I may be shooting more video and stills with it. I might be using it more as a camera than ever before.
Yeah, I regret it now because I totally forgot about 4K when I did buy it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm getting better at managing. And Apple's getting better. Everything from iCloud Photo Library to asset thinning to on-demand resources. They're getting better at intelligently managing it. So I hope I'm okay.
64 gigs is enough for almost anybody. 16's not. Why they still sell 16 is beyond me.
I can tell you.
The enterprise,
Why? The enterprise? Like
my mom uses 7 gigabytes on her iPhone. George's husband, we checked yesterday, he uses 9 gigabytes on his iPhone. I was talking to a bunch of people, even nerds like from Enantech at the event, and they all stream everything now. There's almost nothing resident on their devices anymore.
Yeah.
So it's an issue for a huge amount of people, but not for everybody.
I've been saying that for years. You don't need as much as you used to. This isn't an iPod, for crying out loud.
I just wish they would change the SKU and make it like an education SKU like they do with the Emac, so that if you are an enterprise buyer or an education buyer, there's a big visible differentiator that lets you know that you might have a problem.
Yeah.
The cynic in me says it's so they can have a $650 starting price.
Yeah, and high ASPs. The ASP is king. That's why they dropped the price of the 64 and the 128, because they make 16 slightly less comfortable and then the other one's slightly more affordable and you get a really nice ASP out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Apple is in danger of looking like cheapskates. But I do think they could easily make the base phone 32 gigs make a lot of people's lives so much more pleasant, because it's not that people need 32 gigs. It's not that people need 64 gigs. It's the problem when they suddenly have 16.8 gigabytes worth of stuff. When they take that next picture that says, sorry, we're not taking any more pictures. You're totally out of space. And if you could buy an extra three gigs, or if you could just put a memory card into the thing to expand the storage, that wouldn't be a big deal. It would be such a boon for users if Apple said, tell you what, we can give you 32 gigs for $200 on contract. We're going to give you 32 gigs.
The price for the, how much do they charge for each additional bump in?
$100
$100 Yeah. So 16 to 32 is 100, 32 is 64.
16 to 64 is 100, 64 to 128 is 100.
Oh, they don't do a 32, that's right.
No, so like there's a lot of technical details here. Like the there's different kinds of NAND flash that you can buy. And the TLC NAND flash they use for the bigger phones is much cheaper. Well, it's, no, it's cheaper.
It's cheaper.
It's two-layer instead of multi-layer. Multi-layer is what they use MLC, on the 16.
Right.
And because there's no additional slots, they'd have to double density that to get to 32, which makes 32 quite a bit more expensive, relatively speaking. So there's a whole bunch of, but I mean, it's Tandy's point. It is hocus pocus. The richest company in the world. They could do anything, but they have to report these to Wall Street. And if Wall Street sees the average sales price changing, especially going down, that's a lot of pressure on Apple.
Looking at these images, of course, remember this is Apple, and these are people using the iPhone 6S who know exactly how to get the most out of it. But
can I say, one of the things that really impressed me about these sample photos is that these aren't the usual pretty human being standing on the beach
at
sunset.
They're more like you would actually take.
Well, no, not just that. But I mean, if you that's painted beautiful. The inside of my hat with silver nitrate and held it up to the sun, it would take a great picture of a pretty person at sunset on a beach. they're showing you pictures that, of course, are taken with real photographers who knew what they were doing. The things were on tripods, probably, but a lot of these are subjects that would be really, really challenging. Like that scene inside the ice cave.
Yeah,
that's almost impossible.
That's incredible.
It's not just a pretty picture, but think about how it's got one huge positive source of light in the background. Yeah. Even that isn't blown out. But nonetheless, you still have contours and texture in all the shadows in the foreground and color in the foreground. That's what gets me excited about this new phone.
I'd love to know, though, if this is HDR. I would almost certainly.
It's auto now. It's automatic.
It's automatic, so it doesn't matter.
That's completely fair.
Yep.
I think every demo photo should be turn the camera on to all into auto. The user just aims it and presses a shutter button. Whatever choices the phone decides to make on its own is what goes. So HDR is certainly fair game.
Yeah.
It was only off in the past because it took so long to take a photo if you turned it on. But now you have these massive processors that can just chew right through it. So they just turn it on by default.
Here's another one from Guilin, China. That is just, that's... And as you point out, the auto HDR on this is pretty phenomenal. Yeah. That would be a very difficult shot, even with a DSLR.
It's just so wonderful how great almost not all camera phones, but the best camera phones are. And that's I'm sure that's just straight out of the camera without any modification. But
I would hope
if
so.
You then, but of course, no, that would be unfair, and I don't think that Apple would do that. But also, when you think about how much better can I make it even. If I had it in Lightroom, if I had it in Photoshop.
Right.
And you can always make it so much better, as impressive as it is on the camera, because it's capturing so much data that you might not be able to see in those shadows. The day is long past when I go through like my Flickr stream and I can instinctively know which photos I took with the phone, which photos I took with $1,300 camera with a $1,000 lens on it.
I do hope that Apple's, these are straight out of the phone with default settings.
I'm sure they are. Yep.
I think they'd have to be, or that's misrepresentation.
Yep. Maybe, or at worst, I mean, if they're going to use tap to expose, tap to focus,
that's
fair
fine.
Too.
We're
not talking about people who are, again, dumping into into Photoshop or using focus stacking or using exposure stacking later on.
It also answers the question, is 12 megapixels enough? Because, of course, that Note 5 is a 16 megapixel camera. I think it's more than enough, but... you know, if you have any qualms, the detail in these images is phenomenal.
It's good. I mean, I think we have to sort of start to retire the more megapixels is better is a myth. Because if you're seriously, because now image sensors are so good now. If you have a camera with a 20 megapixel sensor versus a 12 megapixel sensor, the 20 that takes photos that are not quite as good, but now I can actually basically do later on a crop that's takes the form of almost like having a zoom lens on my camera. I would kind of rather be able to zoom in and recompose later on and fix whatever needs to be fixed rather than saying, well, okay, wish I just don't have enough data in that image to make a good picture.
Yeah.
But there are just so many metrics now. 12 megapixel, I'm glad they bumped it up. If they stuck with 8, that would have been horrifying and unsaleable maybe.
I am a sucker too for, when the HTC did its Zoes. Back to the live images, the cinemagrams, and so forth. I'm a sucker for live photos. I can't wait to play with that. Tell me about this, though. Will I be able to put this live photo anywhere but on an Apple device. I heard you could put it on Facebook. Is that the case?
So
I'll let you
Serenity is the expert on all this stuff. By the way, Serenity,
it's unclear.
Love the Apple Music book. Thank you so much for writing that.
Oh, thank you.
We needed
it was labor of love.
And I hope you'll be doing the same thing for the iPhone.
That's the hope.
Yeah.
If we don't all fall asleep or apart
for
from
people
exhaustion.
Who doesn't know don't know that Serenity Caldwell does really well. All of iMore now does really excellent how to things on Apple stuff, and I found a niche, a really good niche.
Thank you.
Yeah, a deep dive into how this works and how to get the most out of it is so valuable.
Yeah, we tend to agree.
Yeah. So live photos. So live can I embed photos. These anywhere, or do I have to use a player?
So currently, live photos, I believe, are limited to iOS devices. They'll even work on iOS devices. Is this right, Renee? Before iOS 9, if you send them to other people in messages, or non-6S devices, but on iOS 9.
Yeah, you just have to long press instead of force press to play them.
Okay.
But
I had heard that Facebook was going to support this, but these are not animated GIFs. These are something else.
They're animated JPEGs.
They're animated. They've got to be videos.
No,
they're technically JPEGs. Sorry. Yeah.
They're JPEGs.
No, go ahead, Renee. You know more of the technical details.
Yeah, how does this work? I know, to preface what you're about to say, that the way it works is a second and a half before you actually shoot the picture, it's recording on each side, a second and a half before and after. So you get a 3-second. And it's 30 frames a second, right? So you get 90 images from the still that you took. Then what happens?
Yeah, so more or less, because some people are nervous about the fact that a camera, it might be pre-recording before you press the button. Digital cameras are hot. Like, that sensor is alive because that's how it
all
captures photos so quickly. Yeah. So it's just taking advantage of that, but keeping a 1.5-second buffer instead of a millisecond buffer as you would on a normal camera. And then exactly what you said, they don't want to call it a video because it's not defaulting down to 1080p or 4K resolution. It's the full 12 megapixels, and it's basically taking that stack of shots for 1.5 seconds before, 1.5 seconds after, and then it's using an algorithm to go through. And I don't know if it's a delta. Delta makes sense in this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Only the changes.
Yeah. So it's compressing it as much as it can, apparently, it's around 2 times the size of a normal photo, maybe a little bit more.
That's fine.
When you watch them back, you sometimes see frames. Because it's just trying to do a lot of work at once, but not often. I didn't see that often.
It's not like the animated GIFs you get from Google, for instance, when Google finds a few pictures that were taken simultaneously, and they're like,
no,
right. This is fluid.
Yeah, they call it animated again because they're stressing it's not literally taking.
But there's
video
audio too, right?
Yeah, they include the audio file as well. So I think it's just because some people will say, well, it's not technically video, and then there'll be a whole news cycle out of it. So they're being very clear that it's just recording these still images and adding audio to it.
It's an animated JPEG.
Absolutely, with audio, which animated GIFs or GIFs.
Facebook says in the iOS app it'll be supported. I presume it's just going to be iOS and Apple devices, really.
It sounds like they're making the format open, and if anyone wants to support it, they can support it. I mean, I don't think it's a big mystery how they're doing it.
I loved Zoe's, and this was the HTC thing that started with the HTC One. But because no one could see it, it just really didn't. But this is, I love this idea. In fact, I even tell people when they get a new camera and they're shooting a lot of stills, I say, don't forget your camera does video. Don't shoot half an hour. Shoot 6 seconds every once in a while, because you would then make a slideshow with video, and it just works really well. You're not going to be editing video; it's just part of the slideshow. And I think this would really be spectacular. I'm sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
No, I have heard people have told me that it's headed to Facebook, but that's just something that people have told me as opposed to something I verified. That's why, you know, all three of us were like holding back saying, I hope Andy knows something for a fact. I hope Renee knows something for a fact.
We're guessing. A lot of guessing here.
They might have announced partnerships.
It's a nice feature. But what I like the most about it is that it's the kind of feature I like where if you want to use it, it's there. If you don't want to use it, it won't get in your way. They're saying you may as well leave it on all the time, just like a lot of people leave auto HDR on all the time. I think that like anything else, the answer is going to be 6 months from now. Are people actually using and sharing these things, or is it something that they're barely aware it's an actual feature?
I, for one, hope it succeeds. And so often you see this. It's not just Apple, but it happens, seems to happen a lot with Apple, where they do something and then they don't put enough wood in the to simulate John Gruber. They don't put enough wood into behind the arrow to make it universal, and then it just kind of gets not used. And yeah. I love this idea.
Messages continues to be a bummer. There are a lot of reasons why that didn't become an open standard, and not all of them were within Apple's control. But that's the difference between Messages being something that everybody can throw themselves into without any question, and it being a concern of, okay, but I hope that I can do something with this without having to buy Apple products for the rest of my life, which would be nice.
The one super nice thing about the live photos too is that you can set them as the wallpaper, and then on your lock screen you can just press it and that'll animate. Like you could see me stumbling out of a bar or something, or BB-8 just do a couple seconds.
I'm not going to use it to take pictures of you stumbling out of bars.
No, that's fine. But I mean, you can also send them to your watch, and those become the new, because watchOS 2 supports the animated watch screens.
Okay, there's a good use for it.
So you have all, you see the little flower open up, you'll see your child smile, or you'll see, you know, whatever you've shot.
And to forestall people who are going to tell me, Leo, Nokia invented this in
1812.
Like everything. We know, but we're going to still be excited, because this is the mainstreaming of something. And this is what Apple does better than anybody, take something existing and mainstream it.
If you popularize it, you kind of win. But like to your and Andy's point, digital touch is nice. And I don't get sent sketches anymore. I mean, I love them, but I just don't get sent them.
No, I don't do heartbeats anymore either.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. Maybe if Apple makes it popular, then they deserve, you know, all the accolades that come with it. If it's just the latest in a long line of cute photos that nobody ends up using, then we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Do you mind? I want to take a little break because I just got my new in-ear monitors. And I want to replace. I've been using Shure kind of ready-made in-ear monitors, and I want to replace these. Look how nicely they package these, and for the price they ought to. You have to go to a audiologist to get molds made. So that's, I hope you're not offended, but that's what the inside of my ear looks like.
And before we go away, though,
I'm going to put these in.
I'm watching the keynote video right now. A listener on Facebook said that, a listener on Twitter said that Facebook integration was specifically mentioned during the event as happening next year.
That was my impression too.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I realized that I was watching the thing like this on a street corner. So the way that my brain works,
obvious, right?
Oh, obviously, yeah, but. The way my brain works, unless I remember specifically where I heard that, I don't like to say that that's a fact.
Good. So it is a fact, and we know that now. We're so happy. I suddenly hear what you guys sound like. You sound marvelous.
Terrible.
It's a whole different experience. Let me take this.
We're going to have to be more oblique in our insults now.
I feel like Bono.
You can tell me and Andy apart.
Well, you're on the left and you're on the right. Good. I'm excited. I feel like the camera breakthrough, I was mocking Apple for saying in its tagline about the new iPhone, the only thing that's changed is everything, which I guess you're saying, Renee, is almost tongue-in-cheek. And now that I think about it, maybe it is a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, because they get crap for that every year. They're all, it looks the same. Oh, there's nothing new about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Except so there are a few cool new things like this. I think the new camera is going to be worthy.
Yeah. I was reading someone from, I think, Mashable got to ride in Tim Cook's limo for 20 minutes on his way to his surprise appearance. BuzzFeed. Thank you. At the Apple
that's
store.
Access.
That's interesting. Or maybe just like maybe you just like used an Uber. You just decided to.
Hey, Patchkowski, you want a ride?
Yeah,
Tim pulled up
for $20 for a chauffeur's cap. But one of the interesting things that from that little interview though was that Tim seemed to the writers said that he seemed to bristle a little bit at the suggestion that there are tick and talk cycles, and he wanted to say no. Every single iPhone we make is most important. The thing we make for that year. So maybe it's time to start talking about new case design, not new case design.
Do I need a new case, by the way, for this? Or can I use my old cases?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know.
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the
it
new.
It depends on the manufacturer. So every case has manufacturer tolerances. Apples are incredibly precise. Not all manufacturers have incredibly precise tolerances. So the case can be slightly tighter than the one you buy and slightly looser than the one that I buy. So more or less, they should fit. But if you're buying a case that has incredibly low tolerance or is tight in the wrong direction, then you might have problems.
Here's some of these. Oh, I can't wait to shoot these. So the way you make these live video, for those of you listening at home, I apologize, but you can go to the Apple site, apple.com/iPhone to see these. The way you make them animate what are the three levels again? Touch, push, and pop? Touch, press,
and hint, peek, and pop.
Sounds like a breakfast cereal.
Hint is unofficial. Hint kind of just shows you there's something
hint,
there once
peek
you
and pop
on it.
iPhone 6, the new iPhone. So I hint, peek, or pop this to get the animation.
You just press this. There's only one level for this.
There's no hint, peek, or pop. Mm. This is awesome. Are you getting audio too, Jason? I don't know if you're getting audio off my Mac. Because I presume that beach picture of the dog has a little ocean. Yeah, I guess not.
Okay, I mean, a couple of interesting things about this. The fact that it's compatible with older phones by just doing a tap and hold makes you wonder how deep how successful developers are going to be in differentiating this 3D touch from just simply tap and hold. It's the sort of feature that you're going to have to actually try and use to understand why it has to differentiate from tap and hold. But anytime you add to the vocabulary of a touch user interface, you got a lot of work in front of you, not only to educate users, but to educate developers. I think that we're going to see a first generation of apps where there is no particular reason why this could not have been a tap and hold. And it's going to take a while for the flavors to really deepen on that one.
Yeah.
They're going to be really, I mean, if you go through the 3D touch developer documentation, they are really specific in how you can use it right now. So you can use it for home screen options. And that means you press on an icon on the home screen and it gives you up to four options that are two lines of text each and an optional icon. And some of those can be static and some can be dynamic, but that's it. You don't get willy-nilly access. And same in apps, you can use the hint to preview content, the peak to preview it in a view screen that you load into the app, and then the pop to change apps. So it's all the interactions are carefully controlled right now by Apple. And the interesting thing is that with tap and hold, the problem with that is just people never knew how long to tap and hold for, and you would either take it off too early and not get it, or you'd waste time, and it never felt like you were in complete control of the interaction. And the idea here is you're just pressing, so that like it's an instant upon press gesture, and they believe that's sort of a better user experience overall.
IO Geek in our chat room wants to know if, because tap and hold does burst mode now, right? Will it still do burst mode?
Yeah, it still does delete. Like if you still want to delete an icon from your home screen, because that they want to make sure nothing destructive happens. So you're holding that for a while. So all that stuff is still there. And they've got, for example, they built VoiceOver into 3D Touch for accessibility. And they have a bunch of accessibility options for it too. But they're very careful to say on older devices, don't abandon them. Make sure you have
They have to.
And the nicest thing, like especially like for me in Serenity, is like you can use this to do a rudimentary level of pressure sensitivity even in drawing apps, and I think that's fantastic.
Oh, that'll be neat with your finger.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what third-party developers do with this, because theoretically these APIs should be available for third parties.
This is the OIS in video. That is pretty impressive.
It's so so well done.
Wow. Yeah.
And so typical of how Apple approaches features, I think in general, but also specifically for photos, there are all kinds of really cool features you find in other photo apps, like focus stacking, deep focus, the ability to say stand still. We will take camera takes a range of focus stops, and so it can either artificially create shallow focus or artificially create deep focus. But that's something that you have to know the feature exists, you have to know how to use that thing, and then you have to follow directions in order to make it happen. Apple's take is usually, can we find a way to just do things automatically so that we just take the picture. If you want that to be a motion picture, it'll be a motion photo. If you want it to, if it be better as an HDR, it will automatically be an HDR. Just one button, press that shutter button, and we'll give you a picture.
They're putting a flash on the selfie side. Is that right? With Retina flash, every side is your best side.
They made a custom chip, Leo, that would light up the screen three times brighter than normal.
Oh, it's not a flash.
Selfie flash you.
You know what? There is a camera, and I think it's this one. Yes, it is. The Moto X has a flash in the front.
Right.
And everybody says, oh, it's blinding. Don't ever use it.
No, but it takes good pictures.
Does it? I have to try it.
I did use it by accident the first time, and it was disorienting until I saw, oh wow, that's actually a really good picture.
Let me tell you
how important this is. I was at one of the sculpture galleries at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I wanted to get a selfie of myself with this sculpture I really like, but it's in shadow. It's just absolute crap. And what I actually wound up doing was I had, of course, a pocket full of phones, so I had the iPhone 6S. Plus a little bit stacked on top of the Samsung Galaxy Note, and then one was turned around so that I could just basically put one in flashlight mode behind it, so I was just using that as a flashlight to illuminate my face to get some light on the subject so I could get that picture. So this is going to change a lot of things, and also you'll love the idea. I think people are going to misunderstand this as it will just simply light up the screen to make it happen. No, it actually overdrives the screen by quite a bit to actually turn it into not just an LED flash, but sort of almost like a softbox, almost like an illuminated panel, like what I've got here, lighting me up. So that's really a lot of very smart stuff.
We haven't seen how this so-called retina flash is going.
To be fair, I think Camera Plus was doing this with the regular screen
for
a while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, they do a lot of smart. Like, I think they did the volume up as take a photo button first. They do a lot of that kind of stuff.
I don't want to steal anybody's...
you know, you're on to something when your app gets banned by Apple.
Yeah.
And they got banned for using the volume button.
Those poor guys.
Those poor guys. They sold 14 million copies. And I don't want to steal anybody's pick of the week, but they're giving it away free now after 14 million 99 cent sales. Yeah. And congratulations to Lisa Bentley. That's wonderful. Anything else to say about the camera? It seems like there's an infinite amount to say about the camera. They have the slider exposure control, which I think is a very natural, simple way to do it. You slide up and down with your finger to change the brightness. That's new, isn't it?
I think that was iOS 8.
Okay, you'll have to correct me because I haven't used an iPhone in about 6 months. So. There's the retina flash.
And you have full manual controls. If you want to get an App Store app that supports the APIs, you still have full manual controls.
That's nice. And that's one thing that I actually never use, but it's nice to know you have.
Like Camera Plus does a really good job, just to mention them again, of sorting that stuff out.
Still wish you could get a raw file out of it, though.
You can't, can you? Yeah. Well, maybe. That would just be a software update. That wouldn't have to be
iCloud Photo Library supports raw, so it's always, you know, it's always on the list of wishes.
Yeah, it's potential, but nothing yet, sadly.
I think the thing that maybe slows it down is that Apple's doing so much computational photography that maybe they don't want, you know, their attitude is, well, there's a very small market for people who want the unmodified photo. And frankly, we're doing so much with what that sensor gets that you really shouldn't mess with it.
Well, no.
Okay.
Pictures of camels.
Like I said, some of my favorite features are the ones where if you don't know it exists, it will not complicate your life in any way, shape, or form. But if you are able to, if this is relevant to your interests, it's available to you. And the ability to simply check a box and say, yes, I am willing to quadruple the size of every file that you write to this thing. Please do give me a DNG file because that stuff is important to me. If I'm taking pictures of I'm seeing my kid for the very first time. I kind of would like to have, not just for me, but for the person 10 years from now or the software 10 years from now, I would like that software 10 years from now to be able to have as much data as possible.
Let's take a break. We're going to continue talking about new Apple products. We're all excited. I didn't ask you, Andy, what you ordered because I think you're going to delay till next year.
I'm waiting. I think I am at a decision point about whether or not I want to switch back to iOS based largely on Apple Watch. What I'm doing, though, is I'm waiting to see what Android M is like. It looks great. It has features that I'm really interested in. I haven't installed the developer preview yet. So I'm going to try that out. And I'm sure Apple is going to make enough that if I want to buy one in November instead
you'll
of
be
now,
able to, I'm sure.
So they should be able to help me out on that, I think.
I always will be, you know, a little bit feet in various worlds. I even have a Windows phone. But for the first time in a long time, I'm thinking of making my daily driver an iPhone. And I agree with Apple Watch 2.0 and the iPhone. I mean, and this camera. I'm not sure that Snap, Crackle, and Pop is really going to be the key for getting me over there. But I think that, judging from what those of you who've touched it have said,
Give it half an hour.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have convinced me. I'm underwhelmed by the watch and the MacBook use of a Force Touch, but 3D Touch looks like something maybe a little
Once you do a force swipe to get right into the fast app switcher, you're like, how did I live without this?
I can't believe it's you just so said those words.
Yeah.
Once you do force swipe to get into, never mind.
The fast app switcher.
Tap, swipe, and pinch.
J.J. Abrams is all over the iPhone. Force swipe. All I'm gonna
is he? He's all about the Force swipe?
I want a Disney animation commercial for the new Peek, Pop, and Touch.
I think there's characters in there somewhere.
Oh, definitely.
Renee Ritchie's here. Serenity Caldwell from iMore. Andy Inako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. If you're looking to incorporate, to form an LLC, to get a trademark, and more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but don't worry about that. Because even if you, I mean, a lot of this you don't need the advice of a lawyer. It's all pretty straightforward. It's really mostly paperwork. But if you do need to get a question or two answered, LegalZoom can also connect you with an independent attorney at a pre-negotiated flat rate, very affordable rate in almost every state. Look, you don't have to choose some random lawyer just because they have a big building downtown and charge $450 an hour. When you need to do legal stuff, the legal system is complicated, but with LegalZoom, you can work your way through it. It's kind of like Apple Maps for the legal industry. You frankly, a lot of this stuff, as I said, is just paperwork. And I've used LegalZoom. In fact, for more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. If you need help with incorporation, with LLCs, with trademarks, they do that too. I did my the TWIT logo and the TWIT name, trademark that. Last wills, living trusts, we've done that too. LegalZoom is the smart choice. Now, again, they're not a law firm, but that's how they provide you with such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you get simple, transparent pricing, so you know what you're going to pay, and you get customer reviews, so you know what you're getting up front. If you need legal advice, then you can use their independent attorneys. They can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states, and it's very affordable. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. LegalZoom.com. And don't forget to enter MBW when you check out to save even more. MBW for MacBreak Weekly. Then they'll know you heard on MacBreak Weekly. And thanks so much, LegalZoom, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. Let's before we move on, I just want to make sure we've got everything new in the phones. Is there anything underreported you guys think that we should talk about in these new phones?
Touch ID
upgrade.
Yep. Touch ID has been improved, hopefully you won't have enough that go through that thing we have to keep retrying a few times. So that's just making it faster and more responsive. I like that a lot.
Processor's faster too, right?
Yeah.
They do that every year. I never feel like the iPhone is slow or the iPad is slow, but
so it's actually a pretty funny story. Like Steve Jobs was an interesting character, and he would say, "I want the best sushi in the world," and they would just go and find the best sushi chef they could and bring him to Cafe Mac. And at some point, he says, "I want I don't understand all these chips. We're making our own chips. I need the best chip guy in the world to tell me which ones to get and which ones to use." And they bring him in, and then all of a sudden, well, now that we have him, why don't we start working on chips? And unlike Qualcomm, that has to have profit and loss on every chip, that has to support both Windows Phone protocols and Android protocols, it has to do all this extra work. Apple just gets to make as crazy silicon as they want that supports exactly the features that they want. And instead of being a conservative company that goes, the A7 is fine. We'll save as much money as we can for the next 2 years. They're like, no, run faster, run as fast as you can. There's room, put on an extra CPU. There's room, put on an extra GPU. Just go, go, go. And we're seeing the fruits of that with like the A9 and the A9X. It's as a fan of, anyone who likes chipsets will love that they're doing this kind of stuff.
These are ARM based. So yes. the starting point is the same design that everybody else is using.
Well, no. So they used to license the design. Like the A4 and A5 were licensed designs. I think the A6 too. But with the A7, they're licensing the instruction set and doing their own designs now.
Ah. So the microcode is their own. They just are compatible with the instruction set.
Yeah, they do all the layouts. It's actually pretty cool stuff when you look at the differences between what a Qualcomm might produce or what Samsung might produce and what Apple's producing. Apple's making choices very specifically for their own hardware and feature needs.
Well, and we've mentioned that before because they know they don't, for instance, have to support Flash. They can take stuff out of the design that will never get used.
Yeah, and I mean, theoretically, they could take OpenGL out one day when metal is popular, and they can stick in the motion chip, and they can stick in the context voice chip, so you can do Hey Siri, sorry, you can do Ahoy Siri without a power cable anymore.
Let's talk about Hey Siri, because Siri, Shlomo.
for the sake of our users,
you got to live with this.
Hey, screw it.
You can start training your own voice. Better. On the iPhone 6S, you can train it for your own
voice.
Well,
that's my point. And one of the reasons that we're very careful about not saying certain words is because people complain, hey, I was, you know, watching. And but now, as of right now, your phone has to be plugged in to do that. With the new phones, and I don't think, you know, I mean, except for you guys at Apple who are watching, anybody else is getting this full-time listening. First of all, let's flatten that whole thing about Apple's listening. No. Okay, and then...
it's all on device. If people are concerned, the Ahoy Siri is done on device. It's never... That is not cloud sourced.
No.
The thing with voice recognition is you get better voice recognition on the cloud because it can account for way more variety.
But you
can do
that.
Basic voice processing on the local device.
So the keyword, the trigger word is done totally internally on the phone.
Yes.
On all of these devices, including the Echo and everything else. Next question. I think Hey Siri is too short a phrase. It's too easy to trigger. And you all saw this on the White House press conference. Did you see that video?
Oh, it was so funny.
Do you have that lying around, Jason? I don't have it, but I'm sure we can use the Google.
We've done it by saying seriously in the wrong tone.
Oh, this was not even... But you can, if you listen to what happened, you can kind of hear why Siri got woke up and what she tried to answer, which is really... White House Press Secretary Siri. You got it?
I think so. Let me...
Siri answers questions during the White House...
I know you're going to disagree with this analogy in a sense, but there's an expression in sports about a team backing into the playoffs because another team lost. And with having to sustain a filibuster to avoid disapproval from Congress, is the president upset that he couldn't get even one Republican, perhaps, to sign?
Sorry, I'm not sure what you want me to change.
Okay. So she says, sorry, I'm not sure which...
What you wanted to change.
What you wanted to change. He never said Siri, but he said stuff that was close enough. And this is my problem. And I had this problem when I had my phone plugged in and I left that feature on. It would wake up all the time. You're watching TV, you're having a conversation, and Siri, like some idiot cousin, would say, I'm sorry, what? Huh? Mm-hmm. So how are they going to make this better? Because this is going to be a feature everybody's going to turn off if they don't fix
it. It's a bigger problem too, Leo, because now you have your watch that has it, your TV that has it, your phone that has it. If you have multiple people, like you and Lisa could both have your phones plugged in, how does she identify which one's hers? It's an escalating previously undisclosed problem.
Yeah. I wish they would, you know, on the Moto X, Andy, I use Help Me Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that's enough syllables that it's not, and it's an unlikely phrase, that it's not, I don't get triggered unless I actually want it to be triggered. Yeah. I wish you could do that. You can't do that, right? It's still going to be Hey Siri or Shlomo or whatever.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, though.
Unfortunately, you can't set a default phrase.
They need to be able to change that. I bet they fixed that in 9.2.
I was trying to figure out when I was setting this up, because when you set up voice commands, it will not let you go. My trigger phrase when I tested last year's model was Hey Moto. And it will not let you
do short.
A three-syllable thing. And so, no, you need something longer than that. I don't know whether it's for more accuracy or whether it's because they're trying to anticipate that problem.
I think my experience has been that three syllables, especially three short syllables, is too short.
Yeah.
So voice training might help a little bit. It depends on how well it does that.
That's also something I hadn't thought of until just now. What if when you have Apple TV, what if you have another device, if you have Hey Shlomo turned on all the time, Does continuity allow the device to realize that, okay, look, I know that I'm in the room too, but I think he meant the phone that's actually in his hand and closest to his mouth, so I'm not going to activate based on this trigger phrase.
The TV is push button still. You have to press the button to get Siri on the TV, which I'm thankful for. Still.
Yes, that's right, how it should be, I think.
But it's possible. You're probably going to have like your phone somewhere in the room, like in your pocket. I'm sure they anticipated that, but it just shows you how complicated this problem can be.
I've had that happen with Android and the Android Wear watches because they both use the default Google phrase. And so actually my watch wakes up when I'm listening in the car to audiobooks all the time, and I just kind of want to disable that feature. So this is
How many people are going to be shouting out questions in the White House press room?
Oh,
or,
I know.
Or even like at any sort of press conference anywhere. Just shout out, "Hey Siri," at Tom Brady, and just see what happens.
That was the old joke at CES 2 years ago, where people would jump into a room full of nerds with Google Glass and yell, "Okay, Gordon, you're not showing me pictures of something disgusting," and then everyone would suddenly get those popping up.
Yeah.
What if they shouted out, "Hey Siri, what's Obama's next appointment?"
Ah, wouldn't that be funny?
Be picked up by the microphone.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Woodward and Bernstein would be all over this if this were 30 years later.
So the hope is that the training, first of all, the people will use it, will take it, because you don't have to do it, but let's hope they do, and that it will help. We shall see. Any other features we want to talk about before we move on?
Not necessarily a feature, but the iPhone upgrade program is pretty interesting as things go.
So what's your sense? Is this a good deal?
Yeah. You know what? If you want to get an iPhone every year and you don't want to be locked into a carrier 2 year plan, it's funny because, you know, we don't have our subsidy 2 year agreement anymore. But many of the carriers are basically locking you into 2 year plans anyway with things like AT&T Next, where you still have to pay 2 years worth of payments to get your phone, even if you can upgrade after 12 months. So Apple is basically giving you a different way to be like, all right, if you truly want to be separated from the carriers and have carrier choice and still be able to upgrade your phone every year, here is an alternative for you. And the fact that Apple Care Plus is thrown in is, in my opinion, what makes it a must-have deal for anybody who wants to upgrade their phone every 12 months.
In other words, it'd be a better deal for me because I do buy the new phone every 12 months and then just sell the old one or hand it down. It'd be a better deal for me to do it the monthly payments.
It's less of a hassle.
Yeah, but let's say I'm not worried about hassle. Financially, is it better?
Financially, if you are set on selling your iPhone every single year, I think it winds up to either be about even or slightly worse. But you also have to take into account that you're paying for Apple Care Plus in the iPhone upgrade program. And that, you know what, as somebody who did not pay for Apple Care Plus on the iPhone 6 and wrecked two iPhone 6 screens in a matter of... Yeah, I don't know. I am a very careful person. I've never wrecked an iPhone before, and I wrecked two within, 3 weeks of getting my iPhone. So it's definitely a nice program to have, and I do think it sort of makes the difference for people who are looking to upgrade, especially if you don't want to deal with the hassle of selling your phone, keeping it in pristine condition, and selling it on eBay after 12 months. Yeah. This is a much better avenue.
So they're not going to, a year from now, when I take my iPhone and it's kind of worn out, they're not going to say, "Oh, you wore it out." They're going to say, no, it's time for the new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to keep it in a certain condition. It has to be free from dents or major breaks in the screen.
No bending your iPhone.
Yeah.
Okay.
The power button has to work. It can't have been submerged in water. You know, all of the basic things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No water submersion. But yeah, they expect normal wear and tear on it. You don't have to keep it in a glass case and never use it except on special occasions.
And they say it's a 2 year amortization, but after, when the new phone comes out 1 year from now, I just trade it in, get the new one. Will there be a cost involved of any kind at that point?
No, it's a strict swap
handover.
What does happen is that you sign up for a new 24-month contract at that point.
It just continues to extend.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you'd rather just use this as a way to pay for an iPhone over 2 years because you don't have $800 to drop on iPhone Day, you can do that too. After 2 years, the phone is yours. So if you choose not to upgrade, then that's your phone to keep or resell at that point.
Let's talk about Unlocked, because as far as I could tell on Apple's page, you had to buy the phone from one of the big four U.S. carriers. And in fact, if you did the payment plan, you had to activate with one of the big four U.S. carriers. That was a requirement. Is there a way today to get an Unlocked iPhone, or should we wait as we had to last year for a month or so, and then they'll have them?
Yeah, so actually, technically, the iPhone upgrade program's iPhone is an Unlocked iPhone. It just requires that you activate service with one of the carriers before you leave the store.
So it's not carrier locked, but you have to sign up with a carrier.
Correct. Exactly.
Why
so
is
you don't
that?
I assume it's to keep the carriers from getting too cranky and also to prevent iPhones from mysteriously disappearing over the border. You do have to have a U.S. credit card to sign up for the upgrade program, but I could very easily see people using this as a way to quickly stock up on a bunch of iPhones with a phony U.S. credit card or a stolen U.S. credit card.
Just run out of the country.
Exactly. Yeah. So I assume that signing up for carrier service is one way to sort of protect the investment. In addition to that, I think it's making sure that the carriers aren't cranky. But yeah, you do. The phone is technically unlocked. And in fact, that's a big banner statement on there on the iPhone upgrade program's page is it's an unlocked iPhone.
But if I don't use that program, can I get an unlocked iPhone if I buy it outright?
You can. So this is one of those weird things where it says, you know, full price unlocked iPhone on Apple's online website. And then when you go to select it, it shows T-Mobile.
Right.
And you kind of scratch your head and you're like, but I want it unlocked. I don't want it with a carrier. And that's because the way that the Apple SIM is pre-set up for specific carriers that T-Mobile is the only carrier that won't lock the Apple SIM when you buy the phone.
Oh, it's this new SIM thing where you decide and then the SIM.
Exactly.
But because this is what I want to do. I bought the T-Mobile one. I'm going to take that Apple SIM out. I'll put it in a glass case and preserve it for posterity. But I'm going to put my T-Mobile SIM in there, and it should just work, right?
I believe so.
Can I put a Verizon SIM in there, and it will just work?
You're
Canadian. You're Canadian, Renee. I know you have no idea, but go ahead.
Well, no, I bought mine unlocked because outside the U.S., it's not as much of an issue for people, right, which is nice. But Verizon has always been a little bit peculiar because you might want to drop back on EVDO. And I believe if you want the ability to drop back on EVDO, you still have to have your ESN
You'd have to activate signed with up Verizon. With them. Yeah. But I have used my last year's Verizon iPhone 6 with all the other carriers. No problem just putting their SIMs in because the SIM slot is unlocked in the Verizon. Yep. So it might be if you think you ever want to use it on Verizon with the older Verizon network CDMA and EVDO, you might want to buy the Verizon version.
We've recommended that for years.
That really is the unlocked phone because it's GSM unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you those other capabilities.
Correct.
So crazy confusing. So yeah, I bought the T-Mobile one. There's no carrier lock on that though, right?
Correct. The T-Mobile one is technically an unlocked phone that you can use with any carrier. It just, unlike the Verizon phone, which is GSM unlocked but still requires activation of a Verizon plan, the T-Mobile phone is unlocked, GSM unlocked, and also does not require activation of a plan. It's just labeled as T-Mobile, which I don't quite understand.
This will be in Trinity's book.
Yes.
Yes.
And don't tell anybody, but I'm going to put my Google Fi SIM in it.
She actually has a giant FAQ up on iMore today about this.
Thank you.
I do.
As always. Yes. How do you do your research?
For the frequently asked questions, it usually involves carefully and laboriously poring over Apple's website and emailing birdies for help.
Thank you, Bernice.
Yeah, or birdies.
the birdies. Oh, I thought there was some woman named Bernice that you email. That would be handy.
It would be handy. If I had a contact, I'm sorry to anybody at Apple named Bernice. For
you've been outed. You've been outed.
Siri 5 is coded in Bernice. We don't mean that either.
All right. I think it was really interesting to watch the event and see them start with Watch 2.0 briefly, and then said, "Now let's talk iPad." It was like, did your guys' jaws go? Mine.
I thought. Yeah. I mean, I had hoped not knowing how much information they're going to try to pack into one of the longest events they've ever held. I thought that they're going to use this to show off more watch apps that helped us make the case for here's why you want an Apple Watch, apart from the fact that it's a cool watch. Really surprised that the biggest spotlight was a medical app. Maybe not quite so surprising, given that the next thing they were going to be showing off was a tablet that was going to be really, really good for medical purchases. But they're not showing this off to people who are questioning whether or not their $400 is best spent on a BMX bicycle or a new Apple Watch.
There was a BB-8 demo that could have been done because all these events have a lot of demos that get pulled and moved around at the last minute. Yeah. And I still maintain Jeff Williams with a BB-8 would have sold a ton of watches.
Yeah, no kidding. Controlling the BB-8 with a watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'm sorry, back to the phone. One more question. Are all four of the phones hardware the same?
Yes.
Maybe not in China, but for most of the world, they're all the same.
All the four colors?
No. Just like the same radios, the same, whoever, whether you get the AT&T.
Yeah, they've actually got, I think they said it on stage, they've got like a 23 or 24 band phone now. It's the most bands in any phone. So people who've been complaining about this band missing from T-Mobile or that band missing from, I think it was NTT Docomo in Japan, they have made you very happy.
Somebody in the chat room saying, even faster too.
Somebody in the chat room saying the AT&T phone might be different.
Band 12, I think. They sometimes carriers, I won't mention any names, Verizon, have insisted on independent SKUs just for them. But that's mostly a reality of partner relationships and not of technology.
Apple would like to have one SKU. Actually, they'd like to have one SKU worldwide if it were physically feasible. Okay. Now, let's move on. Okay, we did the phones. I think we did phones. I'm sorry if we left out your pet question. Go to imore.com and read Serenity's FAQ. Your pet question is almost certainly there. So, as I said, I was kind of surprised that they came out with the iPad. It broke the tie between Pachkowski and Gruber. Pachkowski said they would. Gruber said, I can't imagine them trying to get everything, shoehorn everything into one event. Is it, do you think, the case that there will not be an event next month?
What would they show?
Yeah,
I don't know.
They've announced everything.
unless they're finishing car tests, what could they show in October?
You're right. They're done.
I was so I would have bet money against iPad Pro today for exactly that reason. There was so much to unpack with the iPad Pro. Oh. I thought they were going to want to give it its own little volume of air to be.
They didn't even have time to do their traditional. The stores are doing great. We've just sold a lot of phones and all of that.
They barely mentioned China three times. It's incredible.
It's incredible. clearly they cut stuff out and they chopped.
They haven't done stores in a while. Tim Cook's been coming out and saying everything's fine. You know, for a couple of shows now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're more. This was a very focused event. They had a lot to say, and I think they did it. They accomplished it pretty well. There was no wandering Jimmy Iovine or Drake talking about stuff.
And thank goodness.
Because they had to. They moved along and they had to. They did not announce a new iPad Air. Am I right? Did I miss that? No.
The iPad Air is missing. They've got a new iPad Mini 4.
They're revving the Mini as they need to, right? Mm-hmm. And it has an A9 in it now?
No, A8. So basically, it's a tiny iPad Air 2. It's got the same laminated screen, the same high color gamut. It has an A8 instead of an A8X, but that's mostly because the A8X is huge, and this is a small device with thermal requirements. Okay. But otherwise, it's identical.
So I'm going to say something here. You know, they have said sometimes in the analyst calls, we just didn't know what the refresh cycle would be on that new category, the iPad. And they're saying the same thing about the Apple. I don't know, I'm showing you an Android watch, but use your imagination. They're just saying the same thing about the Apple Watch, which is we don't know what now because iPad sales have tumbled, I think they're saying, you know what? It's clear people don't upgrade every year. They don't need to upgrade every year. There's no reason to upgrade every year. So we're not going to update every year. And I think this is kind of maybe a bellwether for what will happen to the watch. That there probably won't be an update next spring for the Apple Watch, not a hardware update.
Well, I'm certain that Apple would like to be untethered from the expectation that they're going to be rolling out a new product every single year. And if they don't do it, then there's something wrong. That's just one of the many reasons why they stopped showing off at Macworld Expo. They just hated having to every January they have to show something that shows that they're making progress on what's it. So I think that in itself is the best reason for them to do that. We don't know what is accounting for iPad sales. It's possible that no one knows how often people want to refresh their iPads. And it's possible that there's just nothing being released that people find interesting. That maybe 9.7 inches was, I've said this before, maybe that's just the size they came out with and everyone loved it because there was no iPad before. But now that there are many choices in iPad, including an iPad Mini and including an iPhone 6 Plus, maybe that was not the size they wanted to begin with. So we just don't know.
I mean, yeah, you're right. They don't want to be tied to it. And I think that they don't need to update it. Or do they? Are we disappointed there's no new Air 3?
So what would the question is, like, what would you,
machine.
Yeah, what would you put in it?
It is.
So like if you put the pen in, does that take away from initial iPad Pro sales? If you just put the new processor in, is that a compelling upgrade? I think what upgrade would you want to see in it? Like Apple's pretty good at saying, we don't care about chipsets, we care about feature sets. This is the feature we want. How do we make this tablet support it? And if the feature is not the pencil and the keyboard and something else, then they're maybe an A9, an A8 is fine for now, and then next year they'll do something more interesting with it.
Yeah. iPad Pro. Thoughts?
Yay.
Happy face. My only my only sadness about the iPad Pro is that I don't have it in my hands right now.
Yes.
They didn't say when you could order it, but they said it will be available in November, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterious times.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I have been waiting for a professional level iPad with, you know, pressure sensitivity and a stylus, you know, a drawing implement for a long time. Probably since 2010, when I first started writing about Apple and about all of this. And for them to finally take a step and say, all right, you know what? We realize, you know, the iPad is great and it's a fantastic tablet, but we're going to add a little bit more and we're going to just go for the high end for the people who actually are going to use it and are going to need it. And people can say, oh, it looks like the Surface as much as they want. That's not necessarily a bad thing. You know what?
Exactly.
The Surface is not a bad tablet. The Surface is actually a pretty impressive tablet. But for me, you know, as a primarily Mac user, the Surface is too much computer for me. I don't need something that runs multiple operating systems. I want something fast, something light, and something that I can do professional level artwork on. And for Apple to come out with a product that essentially fills this niche for Apple users, for people who are primarily working in Apple ecosystems, that could potentially take on something like the Cintiq or something like the Surface as a replacement for a really excellent, from what I can tell, almost lag-free drawing tablet. That's going to be huge. Absolutely, absolutely game-changing.
Artists are excited. And you and Renee are obviously, this is what you've been waiting for all along.
Absolutely.
We talked a lot about this, Renee, with Ben and Ed on Twit on Sunday, and I point you to that if you want an obsessive conversation. But just to touch on it a little bit, it strikes me that the main reason it's not a Surface Pro is because it's a touch first operating system. You're using an operating system unlike Windows 10 or Windows 8 that is from the ground up exclusively 100%. There's no desktop. It's touch first. And I think that can make a big difference. And I also think that the difference between the iPad Pro and the iPad is similar to the difference between the iPhone and the iPad. People said, oh, the iPad's just a big iPhone. But when you got it in your hands, size alone made a huge difference. Suddenly, it's a different experience. And my suspicion is, not having touched it, but you guys did, that just the size alone will make the iPad Pro a significantly different product.
IMAX, Leo. Like going on iMac movie instead of a regular movie.
Well, but like a GarageBand, suddenly it's much more like a full-size mixer.
Well, they can show you more interface. So it's not just the iPad. So the iPad Mini is the iPad Air interface scaled down. This is not the iPad Air interface scaled up. Developers can use the size classes to actually put up more stuff, like more palettes, more controls, to rearrange the way things are presented. And that lets you, like if you looked at even Microsoft Word and Excel, and I got a chance to try them, and Procreate, these apps were fantastic. They really took advantage of that screen.
Even the keyboard is full-size. So while I don't like typing on glass, I think you'll be able to do quite a bit of typing. A lot of people do type on glass, and I think you could probably do a lot of typing.
It feels like a MacBook keyboard.
It also lends more color to the iOS 9 feature that lets you use the glass keyboard surface as a trackpad, kind of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's way too far to reach if you want to place a cursor someplace else. I mean, no one on this panel is more excited than I am about the iPad Pro.
I'm more excited.
It's fine. Given that you have access to the video switcher and we don't, we will say that you have. But yeah, I mean, Apple was such an interesting quandary where you have the iPad Air 2 has the only real library of productivity apps for multi-touch. It's the only library of productivity apps. But they have a device that's not really good for productivity. Whereas, I mean, Microsoft, Windows, especially Windows 10, they have all kinds of they've got all kinds of productivity apps. They are the biggest operating system on the planet. But they don't have any apps that actually take advantage of neat computers like this. It just doesn't work out. So it's interesting that now we have sort of the best of both worlds with the iPad Pro, where now you have a large screen, you have not just that, but full in iOS 9, much better, or even let me just say competent support for hardware keyboards, the ability to have two apps visible side by side, and this amazing multi-touch app library for productivity. It solves a problem that computers like this and the Surface Pro 3 were creating.
I should mention that Andy is holding up. Is that the Chromebook?
No, this is the HP Spectre X360.
Okay. So it's a convertible that flips the screen, goes all the way around.
I've been using all kinds of different Windows 10 machines, and they're all, again, I've been so tempted because my iPad 3 is certainly nearing end of useful life, and I've been looking, well, at some point I should replace it because I use a full-size iPad as a little bit of a notebook replacement. But over this summer I've been thinking, well, if I'm going to spend like $800 for a new iPad, the way that I would need to have it configured with 128 gigs of RAM and stuff like that, for $500, $600, $700, $800, I can buy a Windows 10 tablet that will run Comixology, although not anymore because since they gave up supporting multi-touch apps on Windows 10 ever since then. But I'll be able to read my full screen comic books. I will be able to have real Microsoft Office. I will be able to have real Scrivener and be making it into a real productivity thing. And it will actually cost me as much or even less. Now, this is so cool because it's not just something that keeps up with Windows 10 tablets. It actually solves problems that these things cannot solve with the pencil and with the fact that it's so light and so thin. I'm just so very excited about it. It really does change a lot of the math, not only for desktop computing across Windows versus iOS, but even iOS versus Mac. There are a lot of people who are going to come into the Apple store thinking that they wanted to come out with a $1,000 iPad Air that are going to walk out instead with $1,000 worth of iPad Pro plus the new keyboard.
I can't wait. But I think I hate to use the phrase, but it's a paradigm shift. It is more than just a bigger iPad. It's going to be a new way of, and I think it's the first touch first OS. And I think this also, now it's going to, there's a lot of it, depends on Apple. It depends on Apple to support an app ecosystem, a pro app ecosystem that gives people stuff they want to use more than just Comixology or, Fallout Shelter. It has to be some pro stuff, and we don't see it yet, but I think they're going to do that. I think Ben Thompson of Stratechery made an excellent point in his column and last Sunday that Apple is moving from being a product company to a platform company, and that's a very different business. And I don't know how well Apple understands that. So there's a lot of caveats, but I think if this develops as it could, it could be a change in the way we compute. We think of computing for a large category of applications.
Yeah, I'd once again point people to that Twit episode though, because it was a really good discussion about creating value for software. Like, I love that Procreate app, and I want James Cooter to make a ton of money, and it's not clear that he can and that we'll get a lot of those kinds of apps. So yeah. Twit had a great discussion on that.
Yeah, drill down into the issues that are going to face us. I think the pencil's phenomenal. I said on Twitter, it's a shame they announced that crappy keyboard because it just engendered comparisons to the Surface, unnecessary comparisons to the Surface. But there are some people who will want a keyboard. You could use any Bluetooth keyboard, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. And they may have a partner program. Like, they announced the Logitech keyboard that uses the same connector that the Apple keyboard uses the same day, so they're not afraid of that being
good. They're not going to make that Pogo plug proprietary. Good.
And for those that are asking, you can't use the pencil with the older iPads because the new iPad has a special a double
super
density,
fast
basically
refresh rate.
Yeah, and sensors, so that you need that sort of in the next generation iPad.
Renee, you used it, and I'm glad to say you are an artist.
Yes.
You're really well equipped to answer this question. When you watch the movie that they showed at the event or watch it on the Apple site, that pencil looks so responsive, so low latency, so functional. Was that movie hype, or is it really that good?
So I was promptly sent a list of things that I had to test for by one Trinity Caldwell to make sure that I did not miss a thing. And I made sure to go down that
list. Maybe three pages long.
What did you want him to look at, Serenity?
Oh gosh, hold on. Can I pull up the list? I wanted him to look at how, first of all, how the pencil felt when it went across the screen, whether it felt like drawing on glass. I wanted to see how good the tilt actually was, palm recognition, whether when he pressed down there was actual clicking on the screen, or whether it felt like a smooth press.
Oh, you had a lot of questions.
Source. Oh, I had a ton. Quick hash marks, print versus cursive. There's a lot of stuff, especially when it comes to digital writing on surfaces with pens, that you don't really think about when you're just, you know, writing with a normal pen or a normal pencil. But with a digital pen, it becomes very, very obvious.
And are you thinking from the context of an artist or from somebody doing handwriting, taking notes?
Both. So the thing about, I mean, the big problem with a digital pen that I've found in my years of reviewing styluses is when you're going to make quick movements, especially on current generation iPads and on the original generation iPad, is that lag is a huge issue, latency. So when you make one hash mark and you go to make another very quick hash mark, or you're writing print and you write a T and then you try and write an H, if the lag is too much, that will create sort of an offset between the time that you write the T and the time you try to write the H. So when you've gone on to the I, all of a sudden you find yourself very, very discombobulated in your writing process. And that turns into your writing slanted, or writing too close together, or letters too far apart. Right. And so you basically have to completely relearn how to write and how to sketch if you're doing hash marks or that kind of thing. People can get around it. But at the same time, it's one of those things that for a good digital artist's tool, you need to be able to make quick marks and quick lines without anything weird getting in the way.
So I've heard the palm rejection is superb.
Yes. Yeah, I went down her list, and just some background, I used Wacom tablets for 10 years when I worked in design, and I took 2 years of Chinese calligraphy in college when I learned Mandarin.
Well, I was really glad to see Chinese calligraphy on there, because that is the most demanding kind of calligraphy. A Chinese character, it's extremely important if you're going to make it legible that you do that. There's a flow to this. This is not an abstruse art in China.
It can't look uncanny.
It has to look like it was, and so if it can do Chinese calligraphy, that's remarkable, and it looked like it could.
So the palm rejection is superlative. It's just fantastic. I just rested my hand on it for a while and drew, and I had not a single problem. Mm. Like they showed you, you can put two fingers down to call it. So it does touch and pencil at the same time, which is awesome. You can pull up the ruler, draw on it. I did very quick cross-hatching for shadow. It kept up with me. I signed my name. I did a bunch of cursive writing. They are doing a predictive algorithm. At least it looks like it. So when you're drawing, it's trying to see where you're going to go, so it makes sure it never lags behind you. And once in a while, I caught it adjusting if I made something like an odd turn. But it was so fast that if I hadn't been known to look for that, just because I have experience in using styluses, I wouldn't have even noticed it. And I could not race it. I tried really hard. I'm sure it's not perfect, and I only had limited time in the demo area, and I'm sure it's, in some occasions it won't do exactly what you want, but it is by far the best digital pen I've ever used across all manufacturers.
I'm so excited about that. And I'm not an artist or a calligrapher.
And there's no layer in between. Like the problem with the Wacom Cintiq layer is that the Wacom layer and the Galaxy Note, because I've used those quite a bit too, is there's a layer in between you and the pixels. And this really looks like you're drawing into the glass. Mm. And it's not like it doesn't slide across the glass, to Serenity's point. Some of them are just so slick. And with paper, you're used to the texture of the paper. And of course, this is glass, but they made a textured top on the pen. So you get just enough drag and the pencil is just the right weight that you start to forget you're using a digital tool. And that was the most impressive thing to me.
I think this could be a revolution for a number of different categories. Artists, certainly.
Not only that, but there's so many people who actually, whenever I'm testing out like a Windows 10 tablet or something like that, something that has a stylus, the first question I ask is this a stylus for taking notes with, or is this a stylus for drawing with? And most of them are just for taking notes with. So that not only defines the difference between the ambition of the pencil, but it also says that there are a lot of people who go into meetings and who want to hand draw notes. And so you think about all the different applications, I mean, all the different sorts of people for whom typing on a keyboard or tapping buttons is not the way to convey information that's coming to them or being told to them. And we could talk for 3 hours about everything the thing that got me to saying that, no, I definitely have $1,000 I'm going to spend on the second the split second they become available for pre-order. And the sixth, seventh, or eighth item on the list was, oh my God, Avatron Air Display. And now when I travel with my 13, with my MacBook, I will, of course, have my iPad with me. But now that's going to be my second screen so I could be super productive. I'll have a two-screen setup wherever I go. It's such a long list. It's not just making, to Renee's point earlier on, whereas the iPad mini was just, we took the iPad, we made it smaller. This is taking the iPad and making it into an entirely different class of device.
Yeah. I talked
Why don't
about
I have one now?
Bit.
I have $1,000. Please take the $1,000.
Andy, you are the most excited person on the panel about the iPad Pro. I stand corrected.
Was that so hard? Was that so hard?
No, I'm very excited,
I can,
too.
I can outside.
What categories, though? This may be a niche product, right?
Well, it's entirely a niche product, but I think that's actually its strength, is that Apple, I think Apple is realizing, especially with the iPad, that there are people who want to replace their PCs, who don't have use for a full computer and need something a little bit smaller and more portable. But if they really want the iPad to take off, and not just do, I mean, it's doing very well for what it is, but if they really want it to be a blockbuster seller, they need to find a category where the tablet interface can really shine, and where digital work can really, really be top tier. And having a bigger iPad, again, like Andy says, it opens the door to so many different professions to build single stream apps for that device, where that device is no longer like a personal iPad where you take it and you watch Netflix and maybe you do some doodling. But no, people will go and buy an iPad Pro specifically to replace their Cintiq, or people will go and buy an iPad Pro because it becomes the perfect architecture building space for someone who's working on blueprints. Or people will go and buy an iPad Pro because they can build one specific corporate app for it that will just completely change how they do business. When I first got the iPad, it was one of those things where I was working at a shipping company at the time, and we were, trying to figure out what t-shirts we had in stock. And we were going through and hand counting and pulling along a little cart that had a computer and manually typing all of that stuff into the computer. And so when I got an iPad, in part because I just wanted to bring it to work and try doing inventory on a digital screen rather than pulling along that cart. And at the time, of course, the touchscreen isn't nearly as good as it was now. And it was, a little clunky, but so much easier than trying to pull all of these poundages of hardware. And I feel like that's the kind of big leap that we're going to see in businesses and in small proprietorships, where this is a device that will absolutely immeasurably change how people are currently working and doing business.
And this is where I have to give props to Apple, because they've probably invested, I don't know, $100 million, $200 million on this. I mean, the R&D, I'm sure, was significant. Without any idea of whether there's a market, whether people will take to it. But they, fortunately, because of their great cash position, the strength of the company, and their vision, they're able to do stuff like this that I think no other company... Well, look at Microsoft's a great example, where they got the sense that we should do touch first, but they couldn't bring themselves to do a pure touch first OS. They had to put a desktop in it. Apple really is always... we're lucky we have a company like Apple that's willing to take a flyer.
They don't mistake their products for their businesses. It's one of their biggest strengths.
We're lucky to have so many different companies pursuing so many different agendas.
Well, I agree on that of course.
As I'm fond of saying, Apple can do the things that a company that has less than 10% desktop market share is free to do. Microsoft is selling to 80%, more than 80% of the users out there. So all their failings in getting into mobile are absolutely true, and they should be dinged for that. But they were doing the things that they were able to do, given the companies that they are. Apple continued the through theme of medical technology during the demo of the iPad Pro. It's like, wow, I'm sure you're going to show me like a Comixology, like full page, high resolution. No, let's talk about doctors diagnosing illnesses. Okay. That's absolutely relevant to the people who are excited about the stylus. I don't think they're taking much of a gamble. I'm sure they made this and they sold it this way because they know they can sell buttloads of them to a market that's really, really waiting for it. I think that one of the many.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you, Andy. These are very vertical markets. Traditionally, in a vertical market where you have a limited number of sales, you charge a huge premium for the product to make up for the R&D. And Apple's not doing that.
But they also have the art market.
Maybe there's enough verticals to make it worthwhile.
I don't know. I look at the products that Apple has made. Let's put aside the iPad Pro. You look at the products that Apple has made, and I can't think of offhand, because I'm only thinking about this for the last 10 seconds now, products that they have introduced for which there was no predecessor. It's always about what markets are a lot of people making a lot of money in. How can we introduce a product that's not a Me Too product, but moves that another step forward or solves problems that the existing people in the space aren't listening to and they aren't solving those problems for? So when I see the iPad Pro, as new as it is, my instinct is that I don't believe that their personality is a company that says, you know what, we have never, ever, ever, no one has ever said that we want a cylindrical voice device that sits on a kitchen counter and gets voice commands and plays music. Let's just build one and see if it sells. They're not a company that likes
to
do that.
It's the closest thing, though, that they've done. That I can think of.
One thing that's very sinister for them is that this device could seriously cannibalize MacBook Air sales. I mean, again, you walk into the store, especially the people who are not, 40, 50, and 60 years old and are programmed to look for something that looks like a laptop. I think the younger folks are programmed to look for something that runs mobile apps, and the iPad is definitely that. If you got $1,000 in your hand, I mean, if I were advising people, and we are all in the position of advising our friends and our relatives, and they say, well, I got about $1,000, I was thinking about buying a MacBook Air, I would so put so much work into making sure that an iPad Pro is not the right choice for them, because again, this is all sight unseen. This is based on, I haven't even had a hands-on demo with it yet, but it just looks like so much better a solution for an inexpensive Apple desktop quality computer even just by specs, it seems to be on that same level as a MacBook Air, so much so that a MacBook Air has to make a case for itself that it is more suitable for what this person wants to do with a keyboard and a screen than an iPad Pro.
Maybe.
There was definitely a theme there where you could see that this thing had multiple tentacles, and one was definitely productivity because you have the keyboard and people who want to just have a tablet but once in a while use it like a hybrid. And it had the pencil for people who are creative artists and designers and do media layout and just want a more direct manipulation version of that. Like the demos that they were showing there, some of the apps, like you saw Leon, you saw like a couple of the other Adobe apps.
Yeah, he came into the studio and showed me, wow.
So fast. Like to be able to do that stuff, that used to take hours to do, and you're doing it in minutes. But also another one of those is for people who still, no matter how easy a Mac is to use or how easy Windows is to use or anything, they just feel alienated by traditional computers. They just don't make sense to them, and the iPad has. And if they need more than an iPad Air, but not, they don't want a computer experience, this is there for them. And my favorite thing of all of this is you have Apple now with a range of products. Yes, they all originally come from OS X, but more recently you have the Apple Watch and the Apple TV and the iPad and the iPhone that all run the same foundation that you develop apps for in the same way, that you basically have the same familiarity, the same interactive paradigms, and they put interfaces on top of them that suit either the wrist or the living room, the 10-foot living room, or the touchscreen interface. And now they're even letting the iPad sort of be its own thing as well. And they've architected all their software and all their development stuff so that once you get in, this stuff, it's easy. It's one easy step to do the next thing. And they're doing that with extensibility and continuity. And all these new features are all built on the same foundation. And you, even if you haven't used it, as long as you know one of those products, you can pick it up and not only use it, but develop for it. And I think that's going to be a tremendous advantage for Apple moving forward.
Hope so. By the way, if you're worried about the Mac, among other things, I'm reading the John Paschkowski article from BuzzFeed of his 20-minute car ride with Tim Cook. Cook was making his way to the New York City Fifth Avenue store. Apparently, he makes these appearances unannounced, which must make security nuts. But he says it's just too much. If I say I'm coming, then everybody, really goes crazy and works hard. I don't want them to do that. I want to surprise them. So he pops into the Fifth Avenue Mac store and causes insane pandemonium. Paschkowski asks him a couple of questions as they head to the store. First of all, is he worried that people will give up their Macs for the iPad Pro? And Cook says, I think there are some people who will never buy a computer. I think that now we're at the point where the iPad does what some people want to do with their PCs. But I think there are other people like myself, thank you, Tim, that will continue to buy a Mac and that will continue to be part of the digital solution for us. I see the Mac being a key part of Apple for the long term, and I see growth in the Mac for the long term. That actually is a question that relieves me because I love the Mac, and I don't want that to be replaced. I love the diversity of the Apple ecosystem at this point, but the Mac is still my primary tool.
There was a great thing at the event, a great moment at the event, where Tim Cook was walking down the hallway with OneRepublic, and no one had really seen him yet. And he's like, I wish I could show—we're in the Apple TV section, but I really can't wait to show you the iPad Pro. And one of the Apple people next to him, because they had Apple people stationed everywhere with iPad Pros to sort of tell you where to go, said, oh, you can use mine. And Tim Cook just took it and started giving like a hands-on demo to OneRepublic. And when people saw him, they all, you know, glommed around him. But for a couple moments there, he was just standing there bathed in the light of an iPad Pro.
It's a great picture of him in OneRepublic. And now I have to say, I feel like you really want the pencil. The iPad Pro is not important enough by itself. You need the pencil.
I don't know about that. I think the increased screen size is going to be big for a lot of different people, especially in music making.
Yes,
for people
right.
who want touch screen band. Interfaces. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my
Final
gosh. For mixing.
Control screen. That would be amazing.
Yeah, as a second screen, it might be a really interesting product as well.
I don't think you necessarily need to have the pencil, but I think
you're going to want it.
I think that almost everybody will buy one within the first 6 months. Yeah. I'm not an artist. I wish I were.
I'm gonna go buy drawing from the right side of the brain and practice or something.
There's always time to start.
Yeah, here it is. I mean, I didn't start. I used to sketch a lot when I was a kid. I kind of gave it up because I stunk at it. But when I had my iPad, my first big trip with the iPad, I was in a lot of museums where no photography was allowed, and I had the paper wrap. So I just found myself just sitting there in the museum sketching what I was seeing. And then we went to the old library at Trinity College in Dublin. No photography there, so I sat there and I sold about 40 copies of paper because people were seeing me sketching with it. Say, ooh, in 18 different languages. Is it about the application? Like a paper.
What is this?
53. But yeah, I mean, there's so many things that I have always loved about Apple, and I think I will always love about Apple. And it is how they really make these enabling devices where they take so much of the cruft out of the process of doing something creative, and they just let you do this creative thing. I feel as though they build these devices to help you to enable whatever it is inside your brain to come out in a creative fashion.
I said that when I saw the first iPad before I even had one to use, that this is the computer Steve Jobs always wanted to make, the computer that gets out of your way.
The one Tim Cook said best exemplifies Apple's belief in the future of computing.
Yes. And I think that goes back to 1978, that the technology caught up to the point where they could actually do that. I do believe that's really what the iPad is all about, and the Pro is very interesting. The other thing Cook said, which answers sort of a question I've had, it's about the junk folder. And thank you, John, for asking that question. Why are there apps on iOS that I can't delete even though I never use them? Why do I have to have tips and stocks on my iPhone? Cook says this is a more complex issue than it first appears. I think I'm going to call BS on this. He says there are some apps that are linked to something else on the phone. If they were to be removed, they might cause issues elsewhere on the phone. That's probably true for Safari. I doubt that's true for Stocks.
Stocks is integration into Notification Center. Stocks is integration into third-party apps. There are a lot of underlying things where when I read that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
No, you could delete Stocks.
Well, then when you ask Siri what the stock price is, what happens, Leo?
It goes and looks on the internet like all the other stuff Siri doesn't know nothing about.
It's not like Siri doesn't know, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that, but I'll do a web search
for
you.
She's learned that phrase pretty darn well. He also says there are other apps that aren't like that. So over time, I think with the ones that aren't like that, we'll figure out a way for you to remove them. It's not that we want to suck up your real estate. We're not motivated to do that. We want you to be happy. So I recognize there's some people that want to do this.
So like one of the problems we had initially, and it doesn't exist anymore because Apple doesn't bundle a YouTube app, but previously you'd go into parental restrictions and you'd disable YouTube so your kid or someone couldn't use it. And we had people, including people who work for Apple Incorporated, send us notes saying, my YouTube app is gone. Have you guys ever seen that before? And they say, have you looked under restrictions? They say, I don't remember ever turning it off. And people do that. And if it's Apple's model is not to put their apps on the App Store the way Google's is,
right.
It's unclear. Like they are letting you hide and show iCloud Drive, and that might be a sign of the future.
They do put, though, wait a minute, they put iMovie pages numbers on the store and say when you first, as part of the onboarding, you know, you get these for free, you want to download them? They could do that.
On big iPhones, they install. Yeah, but they're actually going the other way. They're moving things like podcasts and now with the latest version of iOS, Find My iPhone and Find My Friends onto the device. And I actually went and looked at the update history. And when they moved podcasts and iBooks onto the iPhone, they get updated more frequently than they update in the store, because Apple's not like Google. They have no intermediation. They can update anything they want anytime they want, so they can push out an iOS update tomorrow. It for them, knowing that everyone has a certain set of apps lets them do a certain set of default actions.
You know, if you don't have an Apple Watch, having an Apple Watch app on your iOS device is just dumb.
Yeah, you could hide that the way you hide the iCloud Drive
app. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we all do. We make a junk folder. I just don't. It baffles me that Apple is stubborn about this.
Oh, sorry. What I mean is that they're letting you hide the iCloud Drive app now, and hopefully they could let you hide more apps in the future.
You would think.
To me, this points to the years long past need for Apple to update Springboard. It's a really bare bones launcher. It's Newton MessagePad launching. Really, Touch 3D is the first significant thing I think they've added to it since 1.0. And if I could just simply have. Bring up, here's in settings, here is all the apps that I have. Here are the ones that I want to show up inside the launcher, just like I have the ability to on my watch, decide which apps do I want to have show up in the app launch and in the watch launcher. That would be, I wouldn't be as excited about the iPad Pro, but I'd be pretty excited about that one feature.
Let's take a break. There's so much to talk about. We could probably do a 10-hour show, but we do have to wrap this up in about half an hour. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more. And I'm looking at the chat room. If you've got ideas of things you want to hear about, let us know. We've got a great team. There's nobody better. Andy Inaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's great to have you back in the saddle or whatever it is you're sitting on.
Glad to be doing a Twitch show while sitting down. Last week was quite a cool
You were impressive, I must say, in the line at Colbert. Very impressive.
And the most fun part was like, people coming up to me in the line saying, wow, you must really like that marquee. You're taking such long videos of it. And then trying to mute the audio. Yeah, I'm actually doing a live television, live show right now.
Unbelievable. Showing the capability. What phone were you using?
I was actually using the iPhone 6 Plus.
And you must have had a battery.
Yep, it was plugged into an Anker battery. That was the only other thing. It cost me $93 in data overages. But
did it really?
No. I was surprised. It was the video looked really, really good in both directions.
It was great.
One of the reasons, let me tell you a secret. One of the reasons why there are two reasons why I said yes to, of course, sure, I can participate from the sidewalk. Number one, because I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. It was part of my mandate as a journalist. And second, okay, it's Skype and it's phone service in New York City. How long will this stream last?
It was amazing.
It cuts out that I have to, and it lasted for 2.5 hours.
Two and a half hours.
But there's free ice cream. I can't eat my free ice cream because I'm doing the show.
But we got to be in the line at Colbert at the same time, and I loved that. I thought that was fabulous. Really. And you were just using the Apple earbuds. What were you using for a microphone?
I was just using the stock Apple earbuds.
Great.
Kudos to Apple for making such a great product, and kudos to I've been writing about technology for a quarter century now since I was in high school, and I never stop getting excited about it. There are moments where I'm thinking I'm actually participating in live HD video.
It's unbelievable.
Only because I have a phone in my pocket and I decided to tap a button.
That's amazing.
Do nothing else. Yeah. And meanwhile, they're like camera crews in the street interviewing people at the Colbert show because it's the second show. Like, you pikers, all you need is one of these.
Hey, I did an interview with a local television reporter. She was out here for Pixar event, and she wanted to do a piece for her. It was, you know, Charlotte or somewhere. And I said, where's your camera crew? She said, oh, I'm just going to use the iPhone. She said, actually, usually the video looks better than the stuff we get from a camera crew. And it's like, phew. Serenity Caldwell is also here from imore.com. She's writing it right now. everything you need to know about the new stuff.
It's all being telekinetically written while
right
I'm
now.
On the show.
Oh, come on. I know you're doing it in between. During breaks, we're going to give you a moment to do that. And, of course, Renee Ritchie, also from iMore.com.
Oh, before we get tweets, Leo, they have been refactoring Springboard since iOS 5 almost every year. They got front board now, backboard, splashboard. We just need them to do hide aboard.
Yeah. Hide aboard. We need hide aboard. Let's talk about iOS 9 and watch iOS 2.0. They come out tomorrow, right?
Yep.
So what to do to get ready? What you can expect, some features to look for, that's coming up next. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com for problem solvers, for the curious, for people who want to make things happen. For you, if you listen to these shows on Twit, you're obviously somebody wants to learn, smart person, wants to fill your mind with interesting stuff. Lynda.com is made for you. Maybe you want to learn how to code or maybe get better at a new technology in programming. How about taking better photos or mastering Photoshop? I mean, Lynda.com has everything you need. If you're starting a new business and you want to get underway with full steam, or maybe just grow your existing business, Lynda.com has new courses, a lot of business courses, and some really great stuff like creating a business plan, the fundamentals of business and teamwork, managerial accounting. Obviously, these are all things I need to take. Creating customer value. There are also new courses on the fundamentals of lead generation. Very important if you do sales. Media training. Are you going to appear on camera? Are you going to be interviewed on Squawk Box? This is the place. Speech writing. Analyzing your website to improve SEO. They've even got the great Guy Kawasaki on entrepreneurship. And that's a very important point to make. These courses are all taught by people in the business, smart, sophisticated people who know what they're talking about and are passionate, and that passion communicates into great teaching. These are highly professionally produced. We're not talking YouTube videos here. This is great stuff. And with a membership at Lynda.com, one flat fee gives you access to every single course. You'll be able to stream them on demand or download them to your Android or iOS device and watch them in the airplane or wherever you're offline. Courses are structured, I think, very conveniently. Some of us like to, you know, are completists. If you're a completist, you want to watch from beginning to end, you can do that. But many of us, including myself, like to kind of just get little bits and pieces, jump in here and there. You can also do that. In fact, with the transcripts, everything has a transcript. You can search right into the exact thing you're looking for and go right to that point in the video. I want you to try it. We've got a 10-day free trial for you. Complete access to this site. Just go to lynda.com/MacBreak. Ooh, using Lightroom to do HDR. Got to check out that one. That's my shirt he's wearing, Richard Harrington. Lynda, lynda.com/MacBreak, and sign up for your free 10-day trial. 10 days, the run of the place, everything, all the courses. That's enough time to take a couple of courses beginning to end or to sample hundreds. There are over 3,000. Lynda.com/MacBreak. Enjoy. And we thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. So I was kind of surprised. In fact, I got caught off guard yesterday on iOS Today, because usually Apple doesn't release the new iOS until a couple of days before the new phones come out. But they're going to do it a week early this year. So tomorrow.
They're doing the phones a week late. Yeah, they're doing the iOS.
The phones are late.
Yeah. The phones a week late. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me. Let's start with watchOS. We've all seen the videos. You can assume that we kind of know about the time machine zooming in and out and stuff like that. What should we look for? What should we do? How is the upgrade going to happen? I bet you Serenity's been working on something.
I have. Surprise, surprise. No, the watchOS update, the OS 2 update, will happen very similarly to every other update that you've done so far on the Apple Watch, which is just going into the Apple Watch app and pressing, I believe, update from software updates submenu. So that'll be easy enough. The cool
if you
things
don't
that
have,
I'm...
If you don't have an iPhone, like I, because I gave my iPhone to my son knowing I was getting the new one, I'm out of luck, right? I can't update the watch.
Yeah, well, you can just, your iPhone and that watch are technically still paired together. So
I can have
you
Henry can... update it?
Yeah, pretty much.
But he's in Colorado.
Might be a little bit more difficult that way.
I'll wait.
Yeah. So in terms of updating, you do know your iPhone. What I'm really looking forward to on the Apple Watch, I'm looking down because it's on my wrist, I'm really looking forward to localized apps, apps that are not necessarily being run off of the iPhone, but have most of their package contents on the watch itself. It'll make watches a lot, it'll make the watch OS and just the feel of apps go a lot faster. Also, apps will have access to the health sensors, the accelerometer, a lot of different sensors that they initially were barred access to in watchOS 1. What else? A little bit more refined sensors and settings for the activity feature, which is nice. You can view your weekly summary on the watch, which is pretty cool. There's a lot. Colored rings on the main screen for your activity rings. It's not like a big, you know, banner update the way that iOS 9 is, but it just makes the watch feel faster and more full featured.
And it's only five months later. It's not a full year like regular.
It's updates. Amazing. Yeah.
I feel like it's going to add two things that I thought were really lacking over the summer. I've been wearing the watch. One of which is, as Ren said, local apps. So it doesn't there. I no longer even bother trying to launch apps to do useful things on the watch, because it means I'm going to spend 10 seconds looking at that spinning daisy, then giving up and taking out my phone. But also I'm looking forward to third-party complications, because another thing that I think is lacking is that you really have to go into a launcher to make it do cool stuff. And the ability to not only have your apps communicate something useful to you just when you glance at the screen, because you've decided to, you know, put your home automation temperature gauge or whatever in the corner of the screen, but also anytime I want to interact with fitness, every time I want to act with that third party app, just tap on that and it will launch that app and give you relevant information. Always been possible, of course, with built in apps, but I want the ability to simply tap on that corner of the screen and get an Uber, or tap on that corner of the look at that corner of the screen and say, okay, my Uber is now 7 minutes away. Or tap on another corner of the screen and find out that here is when the next train to Boston is going to be leaving, and how soon should I leave the house? So little things are going to refinements. As I said, this continues to be a staged rollout, and now I think that we officially have Apple Watch launched as soon as Watch 2.0 comes out.
Will there be a robust choice of apps, dedicated watch apps available immediately? Where will they be? They'll be in the App Store on the phone?
The update should just happen. So basically the developer has to take the app extension that's running on the phone and move it over to run on the watch with the interface that's always been running there. The only question I have is how many have had time, because they're busy updating for iOS 9 at the same time.
They're doing a lot of other stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of new features that they can add to if they take the time. And I know a lot of them, I mean, James Thompson, I believe, has said he's updated already, and a couple others have said that. So there should be a good amount of native apps available.
They already opened the window for submitting apps, so.
Will there be like a section that says, hey, new, dedicated watch apps?
They're really good. The App Store editors are super smart, and they're really good about putting together collections of things that interest us.
So look for that tomorrow. Because what we're particularly interested in is standalone apps that are not tied to the phone. And one of the things we'll see immediately is the apps that are tied to the phone, like Uber, will launch, if Uber updates it, will launch instantly instead of this long wait while it communicates with the phone.
What's really cool is that they can access the URL session stuff now, so that if you don't have your iPhone with you, but they're trying to contact a known web service, they don't need the phone anymore. So if you're running and you go into Starbucks and you have a Messenger app, that Messenger app can still check with that web service as long as it knows that Wi-Fi network exists. So it becomes a much more independent device as well.
Yeah, we're also going to find out if there have been problems with the watch simply maintaining connection to the phone, because remember that the watch still doesn't have GPS, still doesn't have its own connection to the internet if you're outside of the house. So we'll still have to get all that stuff from the phone. So if it's possible that the existing offsite app architecture was so bad that it was hiding a problem where the watch is not connecting to the phone as readily as it should, if that is a problem, it'll be solved pretty quickly. But as long as we're moving forward.
iOS 9 will also arrive tomorrow, and it'll be similar. Will it be a multi-gigabyte download and update?
1.3 gigabytes.
Should I, if I have a 16-gig iPhone, should I erase stuff now?
1.3 gigabytes, and it'll intelligently start managing things. So, for example, it can offload apps, download the update, then re-download the apps for you.
So it'll do that transparently. We won't have that
issue. Fingers crossed, Leo.
Yeah. Is there anything I should do to prepare my watch or my phone for these updates tomorrow?
police stuff, you don't. I mean, a lot of people are saying take your backups now, but you want a backup that's as current as possible. So I always suggest take your backup right before you update.
You will, in fact, be given a chance to do that, right?
I mean, if you're doing it through iTunes, it typically asks you if you want a backup first. iCloud runs every night when your device is plugged in, so I should have done a backup that night. If you want to be like if you did something major between when you went to when you woke up and when you're updating, it's always a good idea just to go into settings, iCloud, and hit the backup now button. It only costs a few minutes because it's a Delta update, so it's pretty fast. But other than that, I usually just take this time to go through and delete stuff that I don't use anymore. Not only does that save space, but it gives me sort of like that spring cleaning feeling that I'm not going to have a bunch of crud carrying with me to the new version.
You might want to do a clean install. Is there a way to do that?
I do that every year. I just tell it to set up as new.
Set up as new. And and this would be a time to do that, you think?
It's a huge pain for people who have tons and tons. Like if you've got a lot of games that you're continuously playing, if you got a lot of health data or activity data that you want to preserve, because that sort of stuff isn't synced.
Right.
So if you have a huge amount of data you need to move with you, don't even think about it. But if you are using it as a light computer and you don't mind starting fresh every year with just the apps that you want to use, then it's sort of liberating.
Yeah.
Just as a matter of course, I think every single device you should do a full backup and clean install routinely. Maybe not necessarily once a year, but maybe at least once every couple of years. But I found the betas, the iOS installs have been so good that I don't worry that much about it before I do it. The only caution that I would say is that if you are heading off on a trip or if you are in the middle of a trip, and if you feel as though being without a phone for a day would be catastrophic as opposed to inconvenient, then obviously don't install until you're back into a stable situation. Not because there's anything bad going on about the GM, as far as I've seen, but accidents can happen, and you want to avoid those sort of mistakes where later on you say, in retrospect, it was pretty obvious that I should not have done that thing that I did. If your e-ticket home is on a phone that needs to keep working,
don't mess with it.
Don't.
Yeah,
make sure
home.
That phone keeps working.
This might be a good time to upgrade your iCloud storage plan.
Yeah. Check out plans. Especially if you haven't looked into it since the first time you signed up for it. I signed up for a pretty basic plan a few years ago because the prices were just so stupid that there was no reason for me to upgrade until I got sick and tired of getting warnings every single time I opened up my iPad and every single time I opened up my phone and realized that now I can get 200 gigabytes for just a few bucks a month. So it's definitely the biggest value of these large OS releases is not just the OS release itself. It gives you sort of a mental push pin, just like every time you set the clocks back, that's a good time to remember to check the batteries and all your smoke detectors and flashlights and make sure you've got your emergency stuff. Every time there's a huge update like this, it's a good time to think about what is my backup strategy. Do I need to increase my plan? Do I have a data plan that covers enough gigabytes? All this sort of stuff. Give yourself a lot of thought and think of it as though you're getting a brand new phone, because in some ways you are.
They don't have yearly plans anymore. Is that right?
You have monthly.
It's all monthly. No choice. Why is that? I wonder. I would buy yearly plan.
You can pay for 12 months the same price. You pay for
it's
one
the same
monthly.
Price. No, that's what I'm saying. Is like 2 months free if you buy a year, something like that. They don't.
You're willing to shop around for different providers of iCloud backups. Oh wait, no, you can't. Yeah, you can. Maybe we just answered the question.
What is a good amount of iCloud? If you have a 128 gig iPhone, does that mean you should buy 128? Well, you have to buy 200 gigs.
You don't remember that when you do a backup, it doesn't image the entire phone. It's backing up stuff that it can't get from elsewhere. So you don't necessarily need 128 gigs to do a complete backup. I have 200, and that seems to be enough for me. You need to remember that in case you want to use iCloud Drive as storage, you want to have some extra overhead on top of that, although I don't use iCloud Drive that much myself.
iCloud Flutter Library can consume a lot, so that's, I think, the bigger.
Yeah, I'm on a 200 gig plan, and I still have the yearly plan because I have never changed that, so I get a little bit of a deal. It's $45 for 200 gigs.
I'm on 500 gigabytes, and that doesn't exist in the new pricing, so I'm interested to see what'll happen.
$10 a month for 500 gigs. $20 a month for a terabyte. You can downgrade at any time. But if you change your plan at this point, you'll lose the yearly deal. See, I'm getting a bit of a deal because I bought this and it's $45 a year as opposed to the $48 a year to be if I did it by the month.
Those old C-Row plans for Sprint. Just never, once you have them, you never let go.
Yeah. Okay. But anything else to say about iOS 9? So what's the first thing I should do? Should I say, hey, Siri, nice to see ya.
Hey, Siri, show me photos of karaoke with Andy from New York City.
Will it do that?
It does photo search now, yep.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. You have to make Andy into a face on your Mac, and you have to do a bunch of other stuff. But it does, if you have everything set up.
It doesn't do the face recognition by default. You have to...
No, correct. And it doesn't do it on iOS devices. It still does that on the Mac.
I'm thinking, because I'm getting a new iPhone. I shouldn't restore for my old iPhone. I should start over. Start from scratch.
You can restore, Leo, and if you have any trouble, then you can start over. I mean, it just depends on how much time you want to put into restoring all your settings in every app. Right.
Anything else? What your favorite new feature, Serenity Caldwell?
Proactive, which is not really a feature so much as an amalgamation of a bunch of different things. The aforementioned series become more intelligent. But moreover, when you scroll either to the right or if you pull down, you get sort of the old search area, which now has your most frequently texted people based on time of day, your most frequently used apps based on time of day, and also news. And I've been using that a lot to kind of catch up on things. And also as a quick shortcut for apps that I have used recently, but don't necessarily want to go into the app switcher to pull that all up.
How about you, Renee? Favorite new feature?
Leo, I just wrote like 22,000 words on it, so I'm kind of burned out. But
I'll never ask you again.
There is some people are obviously going to love the content blockers. The Safari view controller is fantastic. The way that they've just taken extensibility and continuity, like you can say, Siri, remind me of this on MacBreak Weekly. Listen to Twit. Listen to Security Now. Go to Reminders. Press that reminder, and you'll be right back listening to MacBreak Weekly. It's just so much really cool stuff in there.
By the way, I forgot to mention, but the plans change on the 25th, the iCloud plan. So the prices are going to go down on the 25th. So that may be your favorite new feature. that plan I'm paying $45 a month for is going to go down to $36. I mean, a year. Andy, anything you want to say, look out for, watch for your new watch or iOS?
It's the boring one, but really just split view and keyboard support, because that just makes the iPad so much more useful and so much more relevant. The inability to switch between apps really quickly from the keyboard and the inability to have two apps on the screen at the same time, that is the reason why I've got scars up here from pounding my head on hotel desks, because that's what makes it so difficult to use the iPad as productivity. But once you have those things in place, suddenly, boy, that $600 you might have spent on an iPad even last year is so much more valuable right now.
Yeah.
But and everything that Renee and Red said, too.
And everybody should go to iMore.com and read the article, How to Get Ready for iOS 9 and Watch OS. Serenity just pushed it right before the show this morning, and there's lots of stuff, lots of good stuff everybody should read. And, of course, 20,000 words from Renee Richard.
Coming tomorrow.
It's exciting. It's always exciting when you get a big iOS update. I'm pretty much on record as being disappointed with the Apple Watch, its utility, but I'm going to give it another shot because I think 2.0 does significantly change its capabilities.
And we keep mentioning it, Leo, but it still stands to be true. Everyone from the iPhone 4S and the iPad 2 up is getting this update on the same day on every carrier in every region all at the same time.
Yeah.
And I still wish that everyone would follow that model as much as possible.
Question from one of our chatters. If you do a backup of your iPhone, is the restore going to have everything, including settings, logins, photos? Is that backup complete? Like your phone will be identical to the way it was?
Should be.
If you want like identical down to passwords being saved, you have to do an encrypted backup on iTunes. That's still the way to actually literally take almost like an image of that phone and put it there. And you won't have to even enter your passwords again. Everything else, when you do a restore, it might, for example, it'll ask you for your iCloud password. It might ask you for your Gmail password again, because they don't want the responsibility of storing that kind of information on the cloud.
That's a really important point. The encrypted backup is actually great, because you are putting in that backup now all of your logins and stuff. And so Apple says, we don't want to know that. So use an encrypted password. You set a password, encrypted backup. Do you set a password, or is it just...
Yes.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you can also, with iCloud Keychain, you can have it store a bunch of passwords, but then you have to authorize it from another iCloud Keychain device. So there, it's if you want just a dead simple upgrade, do an encrypted backup and then restore from that.
This is absolutely a privacy focus, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, as Tim is very, very pleased to keep saying over and over again, if you lose your password,
you're screwed.
Nothing we can do about it.
And that's what you want.
We don't know how your data device is encrypted. Yeah.
That's exactly what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So there is still, of course, lots more to talk about, including the fabulous performance from OneRepublic. But people want to know about the Apple TV. I think we're just out of time. We're going to have to save that for next week. But the Apple TV, when does it come out? Next month, right?
Yep.
We have time.
Mid-October, yep. We don't have an official launch date quite yet. So, but developers are getting their kits. Their dev kits are getting shipped out next week, I believe.
And I have been told one of our iOS developers, is already working on a Twit app for the new Apple TV.
How great is that, Leo?
I am thrilled. Thank
we can
you.
Be on television.
Yeah. First-class app citizen.
I am thrilled. Well, people always said, why aren't you on the Apple TV? Because Apple didn't ask us. You didn't have that choice. Now we
do. Such simple stuff. Just the ability to put content on that device without having an army of lawyers able to negotiate a deal with Apple and convince them that you are important enough to have a space on Apple TV.
Yahoo.
I'm amazed it took this many years for that to happen.
Yeah. Is the lack of web view going to be, I think it's going to make it challenging for developers.
Apple removed the headers from the files so that they become essentially private APIs and developers can't access them. So again, like Apple Watch, Apple TV, iOS, these are all exactly the same SDK essentially, but they greatly restricted what you can use on the Apple television. They did leave the old JSON app. So if you just want to make an app that the style of which exists today, you can do that pretty quickly. But I think they wanted to avoid the, we'll just take our website, put a packer, a thin layer around it, and call that our app and go with it.
Well, for that reason, I'm very glad we have an API for the Twit site, and the developer who's working on the TV app understands that and is using the API. So you won't have web views. You'll have a kind of native experience. I can't wait. All right, get ready with your picks of the week, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to do that in just a moment. But first, a word from Wealthfront. If you've been watching the stock market go up and down, I guess it's up now, it probably is a little nerve-wracking. I mean, look, we all should be saving for our future retirement. Maybe your family has a savings account for a vacation or a home. Your long-term investments are critical. And try to remember that. It's long-term. You're in it for the long haul. The question is, how are you going to do that? Are you going to manage it? Are you going to rebalance? Are you going to have a little bit in international, a little bit in bonds, a little bit in equities, and then the equities make money and you put more in bond? Are you going to do all that? Or, because that's a lot of work and you got to pay attention, or are you going to spend as much as 1% to 3% of what you have under management for somebody else to do it, an advisor? I don't think you people, the people who listen to these shows, are the type of people that let somebody else decide where your money goes. And that 1% to 3% is huge, not to mention the hidden fees and the transactions. At the same time, we're all busy, and what you don't want to do is kind of put your money in somewhere and just forget about it. You need to kind of pay attention a little bit. I have a great solution. It's kind of betwixt and between. It's called Wealthfront. You could start with as little as $500, and it's programmatic. They have software designed by some of the smartest people on Wall Street, and it's doing stuff that is fantastic. And the real key is, besides the fact that it's hassle-free, they only charge 0.25% per year. So we're talking, 25 basis points. And there are no commissions, no hidden fees. If you had $30,000 invested, it'd be about $5 a month. And you get such great service, including things that would be very hard to do by yourself. Tax loss harvesting and direct indexing. Stuff that lowers your tax bill, increases your after-tax returns. And it's all commission-free. It's brilliant. They reinvest your dividends for you. Whether your goal is long-term for retirement, a little shorter term, they'll ask you some questions when you set up your account, and they'll set it up for you. You can have as many accounts as you want. You can have a retirement account, a joint account, a boat fund or whatever, vacation fund. It is working so well that they have grown 20 times in the last 2 years, now over $2.6 billion in client assets. And I love it. And I can't do it because SEC regulations – say that if you are a customer, you can't do an ad for them. So I have to sit and watch, but you don't. Go there and at least get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll answer some questions about your risk tolerance, your time frame, and they'll give you a portfolio matched to your needs. Just a customized portfolio without any cost to you. So you can really see. You don't have to invest anything. You really see what they would do. And then start as little as $500 if you want to dip your toe in. Just for TWIT listeners, though, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 without any fee for life. So as low as that 0.25% a year is, it's zero for the first $15,000 if you go to wealthfront.com/MacBreak. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. I encourage you to read this, understand what Wealthfront's doing. It is brilliant. Very impressive, but do read it first so you understand what you're getting. I think it's a great investment. It's a great investment. And remember, this is long term. This is maximizing the value of your savings. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. We love them. We thank them so much for their support. But if you guys stop advertising, let me know so I can finally put some money in there. It's frustrating. You guys can't. I can't.
Everyone's getting rich but Leo.
It's like, I did do the sample portfolio, and yes, it's up. Andrew, is it Andrew? I never asked you this, Andy.
It is indeed Andrew.
Andrew, we're going to call you Dre Inako from now on.
Only, but instead of the accent, I want an umlaut.
Andy, what's your pick of the week?
I got a weird one. You know how you like interesting bags, and now that we're using iPads, we're using mobile stuff, we don't necessarily need a laptop bag. So this is currently my favorite bag in the world. It is a World War II surplus Swedish Army gas mask bag.
I was going to say it's a gas mask bag.
It's pretty awesome.
I found out about gas mask bags after watching Mythbusters, where Adam Savage walked us through all the things on his completely screen accurate Indiana Jones costume. And that's the first time after seeing Indiana Jones all my life, that's actually a World War II surplus gas mask bag. So I start Googling for these things and saw this. This costs a lot of the Swedish Army must have like dumped a whole bunch of these like a few years ago, because you can find them on eBay. You can find them everywhere. I paid about $30 for this, and it's got this beautiful like leather, of course it's distressed leather bottom, it's like canvas on the outside, maybe I'll waterproof it later on. It has an adjustable strap, it's super comfortable, and it holds pretty much everything. Here's the outer pouch where I've got a container for cables and battery charger or phone. On the inside part, where you just pull up these leather tabs to get at them, you get, of course, a full-sized iPad, you got your Microsoft mobility keyboard, you've got your, of course, your, you don't want to leave home without your Magic Cap Magic Link communicator from 1990.
Wow. And so have a Magic Cap? Whoa.
Oh, I never leave without it, because, you know, iPads are great, but, you know, where's the phone jack, Apple, you know? I guess I needed, like, to send a telex. But, I mean, the point being that It's not gonna hold like 2 days worth of city travel stuff, but for you're out of the house for 3 or 4 hours or even for a full day, it's just really, really nice. And I just think it's a cool bag, and costs next to nothing. Like I said, with shipping, this cost me something like $40 all told, and that's just one. I gave you a link to one place where you can find it, but you can find them pretty much everywhere. Again, I went on eBay. And I bought it from a seller over there.
Do you haunt Army surplus stores? Are you that kind of guy?
I used to, because unfortunately my fashion sense is I just want something that's khaki, really durable, has lots of pockets, and isn't very expensive.
Give me khaki.
And that's really exactly like my fashion sense, as you can see, has really progressed since there. Now I've worked into, you know, brown instead of black and green.
When I was a teenager, we lived at the Army surplus store, and I would wear, you know, the sailor pants, the bell bottom sailor pants with the
You know, I still just 2 years ago. I should next year, next week, I should actually show them. I think I still have them. A pair of beautiful like leather gloves with like gauntleted down to there. They're warm. They're not like motorcycle gloves with like unnecessary padding. And I just wore them year after year after year for like 12 years after getting at an army surplus store. And finally, the fingertips just wore all the way through. I'd worn them so much. And I'm just dying to find another pair exactly like them, because if I find a store that has them, I'm buying 10 and then never buying gloves again as long as I live.
Nice.
Renee. The last recommendation, just when you get it, it is Army surplus stuff. So it helps to have an outdoors. If you have one of those, if you live
let
in those
air
places,
out.
Indoors and an outdoors, could have put it outdoor. I had it outdoors in the sun for about 10 hours when I took it in at the end of the day. Smelled great. Before then, I was glad that I had an outdoor.
Little smell. Musty.
Smells like World War II. You could smell the victory. Let's put it that way.
Oh, it's boy.
A little bit musty. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have a pick, but first I just want to give one more shout out to Camera Plus, because we sort of mentioned it in passing, but it has not gone free, but there is a new version that is free, similar to pCalc and pCalc Lite. And if you don't want to pay up front for the full version, and you really should because it's terrific.
I can't imagine there's anybody with an iPhone that doesn't have it.
Me, but you know, new people buy them every day. So if you're brand new and you're curious and you want to try it out, you can get the free version, and then you can add packs that will eventually bring you up to the full version if you don't just snap and buy the full version. Already, it's a terrific app. Manual controls, filters, editing. Lisa Bettany is behind it, and she is a phenomenal photographer. So it's if you have any interest in iPhone photography, it's well worth
Lisa,
looking at.
Mostly Lisa.
Lisa.
She's celebrating her first anniversary,
and she's on Instagram now, and her Instagram feed is ridiculous.
Great. Yeah, Lisa's a longtime friend. Really love her.
Jealousy inducing.
So proud of her. I mean, man, she's made some good money on that app.
She has V for video. She has several apps now.
Yeah, the video, VEE, the video program is very good. Yeah.
The company she's with has, her company that she co-founded has created a lot of great stuff. That's the thing that makes.
They did Clear, right? They've done a number of really good things. Yeah.
She has several partners. Yeah. Phil Ryu? One of the designers. Yeah. Super stuff. The other news is Launch Center Pro, which was the originator of this Launch Actions on iOS and not apps, they originally had a widget that was available for iOS 8, I believe it was on launch day. But then after a while, there was this retaliation against widgets that did things that Apple didn't want them to do, and Launch Center Pro was a casualty of that. But now they've managed to bring all that back. Apple's officially allowing launchers into widget space, into the Notification Center Today View, and they've updated. They've included support for just innumerable new apps. Having it in the in Notification Center means you don't have to go back to the home screen. I know a lot of people, you know, the iOS home screen is not that functional, but it's never meant to be. It's not meant to be like a place you stay. It's meant to be a place that you travel to other places through. And now we're getting all these wormholes where you don't even have to go to the home screen anymore. And I love that. Like, I love the force press to go places. And I love this. Swipe down, hit a button, I'm there from no matter where else I am. So if you were a fan of Launch Center, there's even more to love about it. If you've never tried it, but you do find yourself with a bunch of actions that you do often, a bunch of people you contact often, a bunch of things you do a lot, this lets you get to them in just a tap or two. And it just saves so much time. It's well worth a little bit of money.
Cool. It's in the App Store, Launch Plus.
And Contrast.co, the company that does it, they do a lot of fabulous apps too.
Contrast.co.
Yes.
They're great.
We love David them. Contrast Co. Perfect weather and all that great stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Serenity Caldwell, what's your pick of the week?
All right. My pick of the week is something I actually picked up in San Francisco when I was out there. There is this wonderful glasses company named Jins that recently opened up a store in San Francisco. Previous to this, they are Japanese only, and they make really cute glasses and frames. You notice I don't normally wear glasses, but I've been getting crazy headaches from my laptop and from my desktop recently. And I talked to a doctor and like, oh, maybe you need something to block light. Have you tried Flux? Have you tried a couple other things? And I use Flux, but I hate the way that it looks with the orange tinting. And I'd completely forgotten about this. And then on a trip to San Francisco, a friend of mine, we were walking past the Jin store and she likes going in and trying things on. She's like, oh, well, have you seen their new crazy blue light glasses? And so they look like just normal glasses. But you notice if I tilt them, you see how everything looks blue in return? They're actually blue light blockers. So when I put this on, it actually automatically adjusts the blue light coming at me, coming at the glasses, and reduces it by, I think, about a quarter, so that your eyes aren't being exposed to such dramatic blue light, and it helps you sleep better. It's helped me with my headaches, which is really awesome. And they just look like normal glasses, unless you shine light in them, at which point you're like, there's a blue tint.
So it doesn't look different from your point of view looking at the screen.
No, it looks a little warmer.
Yeah.
It looks almost like a 1 or 2% sunglasses tint, but you can't actually tell the glasses look clear. It just, to me, my eyes, it almost feels like when you go into a dark room and you slowly see different details. A few minutes after I put this on, the screen slowly feels like it changes color dimensions. Huh. But otherwise I don't notice it at all. But it has helped with my headaches, and they're cute. Like, you can get them, they sell them prefab in I think 6 different colors, but you can also get them bespoke in any of Jin's styles. And they're really, really useful for people who stare at computers a lot. I've been finding them invaluable.
They're $60, but as you say, if you get prescription glasses, you can have the tint added to any prescription glasses.
Yeah, exactly. So if you wear glasses normally and you stare at a computer screen, it might help.
It's a retinal ganglion reliefer program there. JINS.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this jam-packed edition of Mac Break Weekly, and we didn't even cover everything Apple announced. So that means, I guess, we're going to have to do another one next week.
Part deux.
There'll be even more things to talk about.
And, of course, if you go to iMore.com, you'll find Serenity's great articles on getting ready for iOS 9, watchOS 2.0, and your new phone, and Renee's 20,000-word piece any minute now, tomorrow.
All of the above.
And don't forget the great podcasts that both of them do. The iMore podcasts are fantabulous.
Thank you.
And includes Debug, which is a must-listen to anybody who's a Mac fan. And I recorded a little something for The Incomparable. I guess you're going to do a radio play soon. Serenity is a regular on The Incomparable with Jason Snell, right?
Yes, we are. We're setting up for our first season of 12 radio play episodes. Hopefully, the first of which will release later this month.
Will that be on The Incomparable feed, or is there a separate feed?
It will be on The Incomparable feed, but there's also going to be a separate radio-specific feed for people who are just interested in radio play shenanigans.
Gots it. I wish I could be there and do it with you in studio, in person.
But Next time in San Francisco, we'll do
it. I'll come down. I'll be glad to do that. But anyway, I recorded for you, of course, what did Jason Snell want me to be? The announcer. But The Incomparable Radio Theater. Look at that. You even do it on stage.
Yeah, we did a live version of one of our skits at Lairs, Jesse Char's Lairs conference.
Nice.
During WWDC. And there's a little video of that, actually, in addition to the audio, for people who want to see what all of that is about.
Fun. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch live on twit.tv. Join us in the fabulous chat room. Can type away with all your other Mac Break Weekly friends. You could even be in studio. We had a great studio audience, nice big one today. Just email us so we can put a seat out for you live at twit.tv. That's for any of our shows. And as always, with all of our programs, you can get them on demand, either at the website, in this case, twit.tv/MBW, or wherever you get your podcasts, including the great Twit apps on every platform, soon to be on Apple TV. Just search for Twit in your app store, and we got Windows Phone. And these are all by third parties, by the way. They're not our official apps, but we have some great fans who are very good programmers. Thanks for being here. Now, I hate to say it, but it's time to get back to work, because break time is over.